moments ahead of the anticipated, much anticipated, Fastener Fair USA opening welcome comments from America's Fastener sweetheart, Melissa Magistro. She's looking quite dapper, standing in front of the ribbon. There's Jessica Bowiek, who's going to appear later at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's not often you can be a witness to the beginning of a legacy, folks. Fastener legacy. But here we are. A panel of luminaries assembled behind Melissa, behind the ribbon. Presume one of the partners of Mack Brooks there, now taking the microphone. Testing, unsuccessfully. Shifting. Hopefully we'll have power in that baby before this is all over.
It's David Tellett, if that helps at all.
That's David Tellett, and who
from
is he?
From the UK.
From the UK, all the way from the UK to the USA. I think they said that in Spinal Tap, the movie. Now, how did Bob Bear get up there? How's he up there and I'm not?
I don't know.
And Rosa's up there, too. I don't know. Something
might need to be up there.
I'm missing out on something. I'm behind the camera here, and all these guys are up there. Is he... He's not Mack or Brooks.
No.
Is Mack or
David?
Brooks here?
Simon.
I've only met Phil. Well, there's a decent-sized crowd waiting to get in, of attendees, that is. There's already a pretty good-sized number of people on the floor preparing their booths. This is a great convention center. I'm looking down the main corridor where folks are picking up their badges, and it's pretty full, filling up Wednesday morning, April 11th.
Today we run events in engineering, transport, chemicals and printing industries, and Fastener events, and our well-known Fastener and Fixing magazine. These form a part, an important part of our portfolio. Fastener Fair Stuttgart, which many of you will know, has taken place every 2 years since 2005. It's the largest and the best attended Fastener exhibition in the world. This is a fundamentally important industry. We believe in it, and the Fastener industry is huge, it's growing, and it's truly global. And we try hard to respond to demand for events that bring people together right through the buying chain and serve more regionalized markets. And so we have, over the years, launched a number of Fastener fairs in other locations. And now, of course, today, we're delighted to be here in Cleveland for the inaugural Fastener Fair USA. We're very proud to be here in the Midwest, and we've been delighted with the response from the industry and the many, many supporting bodies and publications who have worked with us and who are here today. I wish you all, each and every one of you, a very successful Fastener Fair USA. I'd like to now hand you over to Melissa Magistro, who's the Executive Vice President of Mack Brooks USA.
Thank you, and welcome everyone to the very first Fastener Fair in the USA. We are looking forward to a great 2 days of exhibits, education sessions, and connecting with industry peers and customers. Fastener Fair is well known as being the place for the full industrial fastener supply chain, and our exhibitors are really looking forward to meeting new customers and making connections here. I want to thank our association partners who, along with our media friends, have helped to get the word out about this first Fastener Fair and bring hundreds of people to Cleveland. I also want to thank our gold sponsor, Ernest Machine. We are very pleased to be a part of their 70th anniversary celebration. Thank you, Ernest Machine. Okay, so I see we've got a nice crowd here, so without further ado, let's open the show.
Yay. Clayton Allen was here along with me to witness this opening. What were your thoughts as Melissa was speaking, Clayton?
It was very well done, and I look forward to the show.
Well said, Clayton. Clayton, of course, with Buckeye Fasteners. We're going to get down there on the floor. We'll talk to you in a bit.
It's time for Fully Threaded Radio.
Fully Threaded Radio, voice of the FCH Sourcing Network. This is the online, on-demand, predominantly fastener-related podcast where we discuss
discuss all things related to the industrial fastener industry. So if that's your sheet of music, you clicked into the right podcast, and we're so glad you've joined us. Hi, everyone. Eric Dudas here, and a co-host of Fully Threaded is here with me as well. He's a gentleman, a scholar, and the creator of the legendary scrubber software. He's Brian Musker. Hey, Bri, doing all right?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, actually. I think you could have added, and instead of any of those things remote, you know, related to fasteners and lots of things not even remotely related to fasteners.
That's the predominantly part, Brian.
Oh, okay. Sometimes it's not too predominant.
Regular Fully Threaded listeners know that very well, and I guess that'll carry over onto this episode 127 of the podcast. We're publishing this the week of April 23rd, just after the big fastener fair here in Cleveland, Ohio. We'll be covering that quite a bit on the podcast today. It was good to see you out there for that, Bri.
Oh, it was good. Yeah. Well, of course, I like Cleveland, so it's not a bad, I don't have a problem coming to Cleveland. So it was good. It's a good venue for me.
And we're going to talk all about that during our feature segment on today's podcast, everyone. We'll be joined by Jake Davis of BTM Manufacturing and Rosa Hearn of BBI. They were both at the show. We'll compare notes, and whether you were there or not, I think you'll enjoy the conversation. We're also going to talk about the NFDA 50th anniversary meeting, which was held recently down in Costa Rica. Bri, you were out there for that.
I was.
We've got a whole bunch of sound snippets that the lovely and talented Lynn Dempsey recorded while you folks were down there. And I think you'll get a kick out of that. We'll break that into two segments, Bri, and then you can give us your account of what went on down in Costa Rica.
Right. Okay. It's cool.
It's also kind of a special episode because we're rejoined by RW Baird analyst David Manthey. Now, he's been driving the Fastener Distributor Index behind the scenes for quite some time now, but we haven't had him on the podcast. I'll have a conversation with him. We'll go over the March numbers. And, of course, the FDI is usually Mike McNulty's domain, but he had to run out to Dusseldorf for the Wire show, Bri. So he's got the episode off. We're going to hit a few fastener news highlights during his usual segment. We'll do the best we can. And, of course, the FDI is a big part of that.
All right. We'll manage. Okay. We're fine.
Plus, Carmen Bertullo's got his final installment of his series on torque wrenches.
Good. So after this, we'll really know what to do with a torque wrench, okay?
You should. Yeah, you should. And if you don't, you can always go back and listen to the other episodes. And I think he's got some plans for consolidating all these and doing something else with it. In fact, if you listen to the end, he makes an offer that you can contact his office and he'll supply you with all the info you need.
Okay, good.
So it's another packed episode, packed with sponsors as well, and I'd like to take an opportunity to welcome the newest sponsor of Fully Threaded Radio, and that's BTM Manufacturing. That sounds familiar. It's because I just named them. Jake Davis joining us on the podcast today. He's been a friend of the podcast and the FCH network for some time.
Yeah.
He's appeared recently, and he's back with us again. He's a great guy, a lot of fun to have him on, and we're very glad to have him as a sponsor.
We are, actually. Actually, we're glad we have all our sponsors because they help us make all this thing actually happen. And the title sponsors of Fully Threaded Radio are Stelfast and the Lindstrom family of companies, including Titan Fasteners. Stelfast, for service you deserve and people you trust. And the Lindstrom family of companies, Lindstrom by any measure. Also sponsoring Fully Threaded Radio are Buckeye Fasteners, BTM Manufacturing, InSQL Software, the Worth Group of Companies, the International Fastener Expo, ND Industries, Fastenal, Vault Industrial Plastics, and Solution Industries, home of Solution Man, not playing his guitar this time.
That's right. Solution Man was up on stage at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We'll talk about that in our feature segment today. Thanks to all our sponsors, and thanks to each and every one of you for listening to the podcast. Please get with us anytime if you've got comments, ideas, questions, so forth. The email address, ftr@fullythreaded.com, and we're on Twitter, where the handle is fullythreaded.
Yeah, load the podcast up on your friends' phones if they haven't heard about it either, okay?
Yes, which leads me to a point I wanted to make before we roll a commercial and then get into it, Bri, because when we were at the Fastener Fair in Cleveland, I guess upon reflection, we still have a whole lot of people out there who, for one reason or another, they haven't really acquainted themselves with either the FCH sourcing network or fully threaded radio. I mean, we've been hammering on these things for years, and there's still people walking around that don't know about it. It's weird.
I know. It would be discouraging if we didn't realize that this is a sort of a conservative, technophobic industry.
Yes, that was an apropos description, I think, Bri. Delicately put, but accurate nevertheless. So it's also not discouraging because the audience keeps growing every episode, and so does the FCH network, which is our main gig, folks. Get out to fastenersclearinghouse.com whenever the need comes up to find a hard-to-find or short-supply fastener inventory item.
Or just any item.
That's true. It's a great place to go, and it's free to use when you're sourcing those kinds of parts. But we'd ask you one thing, and we don't ask you for much, folks, and that is spread the word about Fully Threaded Radio and the FCH Network. We'd really appreciate it.
Yep.
And this is an episode that's definitely going to go to 11, Bri. So why don't we spin those commercials real quick and dig right in.
Okay.
Hey, everybody. It's Fully Threaded
Radio.
Brian and Eric, your online Fastener Talk Radio brothers in thread. Fully Threaded Radio.
When top quality and outstanding service are at the top of your list in fastener suppliers, turn to Stelfast. Since 1976, Stelfast has grown to become an industry-leading importer and manufacturer of the highest quality industrial fasteners, specialty items, and automotive parts. Our array of facilities across North America and in Asia, along with full quality control labs and ISO 9001-2008 certifications, ensure the highest quality parts, and at Stelfast, they're delivered with undisputed service excellence. We're family-run and dedicated to your success. Our customers have come to depend on the expertise of our staff and the quality of our products. We also offer a wide range of secondary services to meet some of the toughest requirements you might have. Contact Stelfast today through our website at www.stelfast.com and put us to work for you. Stelfast. Service you deserve. People you trust.
What makes Lindstrom a leading specialty fastener master distributor? For years, you've known Lindstrom as the premier name in metric fasteners, with an expanded product line that now includes the largest assortment of fasteners and components of any master distributor. Today, Lindstrom means much more than metric. At Lindstrom, we're focused on a single goal: to bring our distributors the perfect combination of convenience, flexibility, value, and choice, delivered by the most experienced sales team in the industry. For inch or metric fasteners, standard or special, in any finish, all packed to your requirements, turn to Lindstrom, where we have what you need and deliver it the way you want. To learn more about Lindstrom and our expanded brand of value-added products and services, visit lindstromfastener.com or call a sales representative at 1-800-572-5550. Lindstrom, by any measure.
BTM Manufacturing is a domestic ISO 9001 manufacturer of threaded fasteners and bent wire products. From anchor bolts to studs to U-bolts, BTM is committed to making your per-print special with the highest quality standards while meeting your on-time delivery schedule. Since BTM began in 1961, this family-owned business has remained focused on providing exceptional service to their customers. Centrally located in Kansas City, Missouri, BTM recently expanded into a 100,000-square-foot facility, which allows for the production and manufacture of many projects simultaneously, both large and small quantity. BTM's website at btm-mfg.com allows you to submit custom quotes quickly and easily, and once you do, a BTM team member will contact you as soon as possible to discuss your needs. Are you ready to get started? BTM is. Visit www.btm-mfg.com today.
This is Baron Yarbrough with Spring Bolt & Nut Manufacturing, the best beard in the business. Sorry, Chris, and you're listening to Fully Threaded Radio.
This is Lynn. Can you hear that wonderful music? This is our beach dinner for the 50th anniversary. The NFDA just went all out. We've got a band. We've got beautiful tables here in gorgeous Costa Rica with the weather. Sorry, everybody back home in Chicago. Just so nice and warm and wonderful. I'm here with
Gary Cravens from Advanced Components in Dallas, Texas.
All right. So tell me your best fun moment of the meeting.
Well, my best fun moment so far, I think I would have to say, was at the dinner reception out on the beach. So when we arrived, they had the full band going. They had the lights strung up. Had these, you know, beautiful white tablecloths on the beach. Had the waves breaking, and everybody was just wowed. You had a big bar set up, and so you had this really just, you know, beautiful, lush environment, and everyone that was in there, you know, fun, bright colors, and so it really was set well. So that was fantastic, and we sat at our tables, had a seated dinner, and then we were seated with some new people that I actually hadn't met, which is kind of refreshing for an NFDA event, because everyone has gotten to know each other, for the most part, really well. There's not typically a lot of new faces, although we do have routinely some new faces trickling in. Because of the intimate setting and this exciting venue, we really had a chance to have a nice, long conversation with these new people, and it was really, really fun. So I would have to say that was probably my most fun moment.
And how about business-wise? What did the NFDA help you with in business?
Well, you know, my first thought was, you know, the Paul Reilly as a speaker, but, you know, because he's just so vibrant and brings my mind was reeling with all these great ideas how I was going to go back and retool the sales team and everything. But you know, after I started thinking about it for a second, I would have to really say, you know, it's probably more like at the end of the day, after you've kind of done all the work in the workshops and having all the speakers and really just kind of wind down by the pool and you're sitting talking to the people that you've gotten to know here and the networking and the relationship building. And you start to talk about your business, and you have these, like, issues that arise in your business, and they have the same issues, and we're talking about HR or employee development, and they're like, well, we have the same problem. Here's what we did to solve it. And, you know, you have this eureka moment. You're like, that's such a great idea. Mm-hmm. And I would have paid a consultant, you know, $10,000 for that, and they probably wouldn't have even had such an on-point solution.
Right.
So that's really my best business moment.
Thank you for talking with me.
Well, thank you, and enjoy your time here.
John Sweeney from Spanar.
And he's first-time attendee to the NFDA. And I just want to remind you, the core value is to balance life, work, and have fun. And we're here in beautiful Costa Rica. What do you say?
Balance is here. Actually, it's skewed more to having fun than anything else, which I really love. It's and the number one thing I'm really feeling here is the friendliness. It's incredible for my first time. Absolutely incredible.
That's good. So it sounds like you'll return to an NFDA.
I'm going to insist they send me every year. I thought I pulled the short straw last minute, but I'm going to insist they send me every year. Yeah.
Hi, we just finished our first seminar at the 50th NFDA anniversary, and our seminar was on value-added selling with Paul Reilly, and I'm here with
Richard Samuel from Infasco.
And Tom Olmstead from Aerospace Computer Supplies.
All right, fellas, how did you like the seminar? What did you think?
Oh, I enjoyed the seminar very much. I've known Paul for several years. I've hired him to train our people back home. So I see lots of value in the seminar, and I'm sure everyone has benefited from it.
Huh? I thought Paul was a tremendous speaker, gained a lot of insight into potential ways for us to differentiate our company and add value. So it was very, very well received.
So what do you think is the first thing you're going to bring back from the seminar to your salespeople?
Well, get the team back into a meeting room and remind them to review and make sure that they promote all the value we bring to the market, to the marketplace.
Yeah, I would start with just the changing the conversation from one of price to one of value.
It was a great seminar. What did you think of the 50%? 50% of us, and they polled the room for our listeners who weren't here. 50% said they would discount, 50% said no. Any thoughts on that? Was that surprising?
Well, yes and no. I mean, a normal reaction from my experience. Yes, people tend to discount and forget about promoting the value they bring to the customer or to the marketplace.
Yeah, it's easy to fall into that comfort level of, I want to get the order, and if I know I give them a couple percent right now, I'll get the order and I'm done, I can move on. So, no, I wasn't surprised by it.
Okay. All right, great. Well, great talking with you. Enjoy your lunch, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm here with
Paul Riley.
And Paul was one of our speakers on value-added selling. And tell me, how did you give me a little view on how you prepared for this meeting? Because you were very, very good.
Oh, well, thank you. It's a privilege to be able to speak with NFDA. Mm-hmm. And this program, we prepped in a few different ways. You know, my personal background is actually selling fasteners in the industrial construction world. So that really helped as far as just having a baseline of knowledge. But then we actually spoke to a couple of members, you know, to get an understanding of what they're looking to accomplish with the meeting. And we also actually had a survey that we sent out to several NFDA salespeople, which basically gave us a read on how they go out there and try to sell value. It was almost like a sales aptitude type test that helped us customize this message for the group, and we ended up focusing on three key challenges that salespeople are facing. So, you know, it's a number of things we do to prepare, and then lots of practice as well.
And you did polling with the audience, and you surprised with the 50% price, 50% not price?
As far as discounting?
Yeah.
You know, that's fairly typical of what we see. Actually, NFDA is a little bit lower, and I attribute that to mainly, you know, the fact that we had high-level, you know, sales executives or business owners in the room. You know, they're when it comes to discounting habits and that, they're not as generous as salespeople in certain cases.
True. Okay.
But the responses were very typical of what we see in a group setting.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Great. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hans Fuller from Fuller Metric in Canada.
All right, so how did you like our speaker today, Paul Riley, in value-added selling? What's the one thing you're going to bring back right away?
I think the one thing I'm going to take back right away was the discount, the unsolicited discounts. We've talked about that before. I think that's probably one of the easiest things you can do to increase your profit is stop making your sales guys give away money without an ounce to give away money.
Were you surprised that 50% said yes on discounts, 50% said no?
No, I think in we do a lot of quoting, so I think our guys, I think, probably are giving away too much discounts. I think a little bit different industries are running different ways. So,
will it be a hardship or would it be a challenge to change them to that value added? Let's not do the cost discounting because that's too easy, and let's go to value added incentives.
We're on the on the wholesale level, so unfortunately, I think we're on that price side of the equation. Especially, I think in different regions, we find that some regions are so price driven, other regions will accept more of the value side that you bring to the table. So I don't think it's a black and white thing. I think for us, you would implement it more specific to customers, actually specific to regions for us.
Okay, all right, and that makes sense.
Janet Winkleman at Wink Fasteners.
Yeah, and Janet, we just finished this innovation in the Age of Disruption workshop. What do you say?
I think it ignited a sense of urgency. I think he was right that people have sensed that doing things the way we've been doing them isn't going to fly in the future. And I've been working on things to change all of that, but this was a wake-up call.
Yeah. I agree with him that the change is happening faster than the fastener industry.
Oh, that's been true since I got in the industry in the 90s. I mean, I came here from a retail background, and I remember the publications, and I felt like I was going back to the 50s, and this was mid-90s. Okay. So the industry has been slow to embrace change forever, and I think the problem is going to come when the world has decided to change without us.
I'm here with
Giovanni Cespedes
from
Falcon Fastening.
And we just finished the workshop on innovation during the age of disruption. What are your takeaways from it?
Well, first of all, I thought it was wonderful. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of energy. Actually, you could see that energy transpiring from all over. Uh-huh. You know, so I enjoyed it. And I think it was just on point. You know, I think as an industry, I think we are struggling. I think there's few people who are deciding to look the other way, but as the majority, I would say we are struggling to figure out what's next. And I think exercises like this, you know, speakers like this is what is helping us, or they are going to expand our mind to try to think about what's the next thing. And, you know, maybe not all of us are going to be able to figure out, you know, but I think just the simple reason that we are thinking about it, the simple reason that we are looking at it and just having these kind of conversations is what this industry needs. I honestly believe that, because I agree with what he's saying, that the world is moving ahead and distribution is not moving at the same pace.
Sounds from the NFDA 50th anniversary conference held in Costa Rica mid-March. Actually, what was it, the 14th through the 16th, 2018, right, Bri?
Right, yep.
Hey, everybody, Brian and Eric back with you. That montage brought to us in part courtesy of the lovely and talented Lynn Dempsey. The two of you headed down to Costa Rica, Brian. Before we get into your account of some of the sessions, did the two of you get up to anything fun? You usually head off the beaten path a little bit when you're on these kinds of trips.
Well, I a few things I hadn't planned quite right, but I realized very quickly after arriving that, you know, a pretty amazing, interesting country. And so we waited till the conference had ended, and then we took off for two separate tours. Okay. Glad we did it. It's an interesting country. Actually, I'd go back again. And I've never been to Central America in my life before. I've been to South America, but not in, you know, Mexico. Never been to Central. It's an interesting place, and it's set up straight for tourism now. But it's an interesting country. It still suffers from a Spanish legacy administration, which means that those things don't work very well. But it doesn't suffer from a lot of other countries that, you know, were really oppressed by the Spanish because they found gold there. They didn't find anything in Costa Rica, so they sort of left it.
That's interesting. Did they eat a lot of ham there?
They are big meat eaters, actually. I mean, really big meat eaters. It's their main food is meat.
And wine drinkers, too, I'm guessing.
Well, yeah, probably. I mean, it's just, you know, it's sort of unusual to be just such big meat eaters. And their cows are all, like, from India. They're Brahmin cows because they have to handle strange conditions. And, you know, they don't have bullfighting, but they have bull riding. So all these teenage boys, their, you know, rites of passage involve riding bulls. And the towns, you know, when they're like on Friday night is bull riding, and the places just go crazy. It's a funny, it's an interesting society, you know, to be in.
Never been there. Sounds like a great location for a fastener event, though. A lot of bull happens there too, so.
Right. Well, not quite so much, but it was a great place to have it. I mean, you'd want it to be a little bit cheaper, but it was a marvelous facility, the hotel we stayed in, and right on the beach on the Pacific coast. And, you know, I mean, the roads are sort of crappy. They've you know, their money goes into education. It's not a rich country. Their biggest export is coffee and pineapples and I guess now tourism. But people deal with you happily, okay? It's easy to talk to people. And they speak a slightly different form of Spanish. It's the South American Spanish, so it's not connected to Mexican Spanish. I mean, it's Spanish, but it's their phrases are South American phrases. Didn't expect that.
That was probably not picked up on by most of the attendees of the conference, but of course you did because you've spent a lot of time down there. Well, the audio montage that we just played started off with the sounds of the opening ceremony or the opening dinner party, I guess it was, and it was held on the beach and it sounded very festive. There was a band in the background and everybody, by all accounts, had a great time. The next day, the conference started in earnest. So there were breakout sessions, there were educational sessions, and where do you start, Bri? What stuck out in your mind?
Well, first of all, breakfasts were good, and certainly if you liked American breakfast, and they even provided tons of bacon. Their breakfasts were all sponsored by different companies, and some of our own members being those companies. But the first session really was the value-added selling by Paul Riley, and he is a really interesting speaker. And, you know, sometimes it takes some of these to sit and just listen to something away from work to understand how you really should be rethinking your business, okay, or rethinking things you do. And so the whole point of Paul's talk was really the basis that, you know, you have to keep telling your own customers the value that you bring to them, because people sort of forget in the ordinary problems of just doing business, they forget all the different ways that you provide value to your customers. And he gave us all the figures and pointed out that, you know, price is only a important factor in something like 20% of all sales, 80% of it, price is not the important thing. It's what you can bring to your customers that's more important than the price. So hence the whole emphasis on value-added selling. Good talk, okay? Really liked it. Then there was a lunch, sponsored lunch again by numerous other companies. And then we went into the roundtable discussions. Now, there's a difference this year because normally the roundtables are split into two different groups, depending on whether you own a company or whether you just work for a company. And this year they decided to join them together so there'd only be one set of tables.
Oh, so everybody was in one big room?
Yeah. And I'd requested that on every table there had to be one member of the board of NFDA just to provide, I guess, some continuity or whatever. Anyway, it was a good idea. It worked out well, and we had to just, you know, come up with things that we thought were important, particularly in relating to how does NFDA bring value to its members and how could it add more value? And, you know, different things turned up there. I mean, Jun Zhu from Brighton Best, BBI, he was at my table. And I was nominated as the sort of record keeper, which was absolutely not a good thing for me because I can hardly read my own writing, let alone anyone else. Kurt Zender appointed me to that instantly. However, it was good, and we had people at the table who had never been at an NFDA function before. And we had others like Kurt and Jun who were very familiar with NFDA. And it was good. It was overall, it was, you know, what came out as one of the things that was a thorn in people's side was the upcoming show in Cleveland.
Right. At the time it was up and coming.
Yeah, it was right. It was up and it was, there were some heated views about whether such a show should even exist. Okay. Based on the attendees.
Right.
Based on the possible attendees. So that was a really hot issue. But overall, it was a good roundtable.
And we'll talk more about that issue during our feature segment today when we cover Fastener Fair USA. But that sounds like a really cool format for the roundtables, a little bit different than usual. And, of course, all of the associations, be they the national association or the regionals, All the Fastener organizations these days are all searching really for their reason to exist and how do they bring value. They've all sort of found their own niches, and I'd be surprised if we don't see a few more shifts in the upcoming years. I mean, just talking with people, you could kind of feel it. I mean, people are feeling out. It goes for shows and associations, but it's really interesting. So then what happened later in the day or the next day? There was another educational series or?
No, later in the day. I mean, we're all given suntan lotion and a beach ball by our friends in Star Stainless. And then so the afternoon was what they call the flotilla, which is really an excuse to sit around a pool and drink, or sit in the pool and drink, actually, or stand in the pool and drink. And it was a very sociable affair, and it was good, okay. I mean, I had a chance to talk to lots of people. And then on, so that was this was called the flotilla, apparently, and then everyone has to get together in the pool for a picture, okay? Group photo.
Oh, no, I didn't see that. That should be out there on Twitter somewhere. I'll have to go look.
It should be somewhere. I mean, Vicky, that was sort of encouraged and organized really by Vicky. I should say that Vicky and Janine over the whole conference did a terrific job of keeping things on track and order, okay?
They usually do.
Yep. And then so that finished, and then in the evening, then we had the reception, the dinner on Mancita Beach, which is the beach right in front of the hotel, and it was sort of impressive. I didn't quite expect the tables just to be sitting in the sand, but that's where they were. We were all in the sand, and there was some – had a great local band that sort of must have known Bob Marley a lot, I think.
Well, yeah, that – actually, maybe that was the – segment that kicked off the montage. I thought it was the opening. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Hey, Bryce, sounds like you should have taken the opportunity to get married while you were there.
You and my mother. Okay, thank you. So it was a great dinner, and and then people went off to different bars and things, but it was a great affair. And then the next day was sponsored breakfast again, and then there was a two-part talk or session. It's called Innovate, How to Create Relevancy in the Age of Disruption. So it was and the speaker, who I've never struck before, was known for, he's a very, very, very active speaker. He normally carries around two shirts because he totally soaks one of them, okay, while he's talking.
Should have done it in the pool.
I'm sure he went off to the pool after that. But it was, the talk was really sort of about be careful, because there are people who are looking to disrupt your business. And he pointed out that Apple's award for the year, for innovation for the year, went to a 14-year-old kid in the world, okay? And he said, at this moment, you can bet there are thousands of people all over the world playing around their computers working out how to beat you in your business.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, be careful. You have to think outside the box, because there's lots and lots and lots of people who are already doing that for your business. And don't wake up one day and find that someone's, you know, worked out a better way of doing your business.
And some of them work outside the federal government too.
Right. And they work all over the world. And that was the base of it. It was sort of, you know, I mean, you came out of that being a little bit nervous, actually. And everyone should have been nervous, because, you know, this is an industry which, say, is technophobic and is a little frightened of thinking outside the box or of using technology to help it.
Okay. Well, sounds like a jam-packed educational series and lots of socializing, and sounds like some extracurricular sightseeing. So all in all, a great conference and very well worth attending.
It was. I loved it, actually. And I think that some of these discussions or the workshops, when you're sitting at your desk working, you don't get to sit and think outside or just sit and think about what someone's saying to you. It takes being ripped away out of your comfortable environment to actually be able to appreciate more deeply what someone's saying, you know, that you should know and probably do know. You just don't think about it enough.
Did you get a final tally on how many attendees were at the NFDA conference?
I don't really know, but I guess about 150, Vicky knows the numbers, okay?
Right, right. That's a pretty good crew to make it all the way down there.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, the one thing is that I was totally took the wrong wardrobe, thinking an FDA is always formal and all their things. Of course, I arrived there, and first thing I find is Dan Zender wandering around in a pair of shorts, looking like he's just been on holiday for, you know, 5 years, which we know is not the case. But and I realized that I had a lot of more formal clothes than I needed and not nearly enough of the really casual ones, because everything was casual.
Yes. Well, Kelly Cole must have been right at home.
Yeah, he and everyone else. I did have one pair of long shorts, thank God. Okay.
Well, we're going to play a couple of more audio clips and a montage to close out the segment here. And thanks for heading down there, Bri. I mean, you do the hard work, you do the heavy lifting around here all the time. So heading down to Costa Rica is no exception for you, huh?
It was good. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, but I said, where's Eric? I said, he drew the long straw.
Well, I'm heading out to Phoenix in the very near future for the PAC West conference, so I'm getting mine. Don't worry, folks. But yeah, I'm glad you were able to get down there. Now, the NFDA has another event coming up that we'll mention later in the podcast as well, but it is their ESPS sessions happening in June in Chicago. That's on June 5th and 6th. All the info on that is available at their website, nfda-fastener.org. And like I said, Bri, I'll have to get out on Twitter and see if I can't find any of those photos, because somehow I missed the one with everybody in the pool. I don't know how I did that, but that must be quite a sight.
Right. Took a bit of getting everyone organized.
I can imagine. That's like herding cats, right?
Yeah, I know. That was terrible. But whatever, we all got there in the end, okay?
Yes. Well, everybody, this is Fully Threaded Radio. We've been talking about the NFDA 50th Anniversary Conference. We're going to play a couple more audio snippets, and we'll be back right after that.
Yeah.
I'm here with Kevin Miller, the new president of the NFDA. Hey, no pressure on you. First year in, you got to do a milestone meeting.
Yeah, first year in, and I'm glad it was this year, because my grandfather Doug was a founding member, past president. My dad was involved, and it's been great to have an opportunity to be involved on the board as well.
Oh, that is super. Now, you get the tough questions. We know all the fun that we've had in Costa Rica, but one of the NFDA's core purposes is to help their members thrive in the global workplace. So tell me how you did that this time in this meeting.
I think we did it here the way that we wanted to do it at all the past meetings and all the future meetings. I mean, we want to provide relevant content to our members. Hopefully they learn something here that they can take away and take back to their businesses and apply to their everyday lives.
Oh, and I think they did. The sales one was perfect, and the round tables were good, and today's innovating one will be very good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to today's innovation workshop. The roundtables actually started off the way that they always do. Everybody kind of sits down, and we're all asked a question, and nobody really wants to answer, to be the first one to answer. And then once somebody says something at the table, everybody kind of builds on it. And the general feedback from that session was that was one of the more valuable sessions that we have at these things. So, I encourage everybody to make more of an effort to attend these events and participate, but also participate in those roundtable discussions, because we learned a lot yesterday about where we are, where we want to go, and what we want to see from the association.
All right, great. Thanks for talking with me, and great meeting. We only expect bigger things from you if this is your first one.
Thank you.
Bill Derry.
Bill, tell us about the roundtable today. What are your thoughts?
Well, I thought it was an interesting discussion. I think it is good that people from the industry get together and exchange ideas. It provides me an opportunity to learn from them and provide whatever insights I think I might be able to. So I thought it was very valuable.
So what was your one takeaway from today's roundtable?
Well, if I had to select just one, I think there was good input to the NFDA about the things that we can do to increase member value. And as I thought our group created some interesting dialogue, but as I listened to the others, I thought kind of the combined efforts of the group gave some good insight to the board about what we ought to be doing with future meeting content to make it of greatest value to the members.
Okay, thank you.
Carmen Vertulo from Carver Engineering and Manufacturing, also known as Carver Consulting.
And we just finished the breakout sessions, and we were at different tables and everything, and then they did a synopsis of the views. Why do you think breakout sessions are important?
Well, for me, I'm a brand new member at NFDA, even though I know many of the members, some of my clients are here. But at these breakout sessions, you get to actually know people. They express their opinions. You see them the next time in the hallway. You have an association. You can strike up a conversation because you've already broken the ice with someone that you never met before. And it's not just technical. We talk about business stuff. Family stuff comes up. How businesses run, how they should be run. What did you find out about doing a certain thing that you can share with other people? So just the planting roots a little bit deeper with the club is the big value to me.
And I agree with that. Also, just that we all kind of struggle with the same issues, and it kind of helps to have that consensus and try to figure out a solution.
Well, it's not exactly a misery loves company kind of thing, but it is you feel a little bit more comfortable about your problems knowing that somebody else has been down that road and can give you some guidance. And it was an open sort of topic. It was very loose. What can NFDA do to help your company more? And they all had some great ideas. I mean, that was very nice of NFDA to take the time to get that kind of feedback. And they weren't shy. I mean, our table and all the other tables had some really good suggestions about what NFDA could do. So.
And that's good. I'm here with?
Doug Wieland with Stelfast.
Tell me, how was the workshop we just finished, Innovation in the Age of Disruption?
It was phenomenal.
Did it give you ideas?
It gave me lots of ideas, but I'm not going to share them in the moment. Anyway.
Okay. And I don't blame you, but you got ideas.
I do have quite a few ideas. And in addition to that, I think the speaker was phenomenal, living on the edge, almost like a Tony Robbins type of a speaker, just phenomenal.
I'm here with?
Tim O'Keefe with G.L. Hewitt.
All right. Tim, what's your best moment so far here at the NFDA 50th anniversary?
As much as I hate to admit it, it probably would be the world-famous flotilla, which is a pool party that we had last night. A lot of fellowship, a lot of fun. Star Stainless sponsored it, so I give a shout-out to Bruce and Robin Wheeler. But just a nice time of being together, and you know, sometimes it's those informal moments that kind of make the grade, so it was fun.
You're not alone with that. So you're not alone with picking the flotilla. So thanks for talking.
Yeah. Ann Sullivan, retired.
Retired? All right. Yes. So tell me about yourself, Ann. Well, tell me about how many NFDAs you've
been to. Been to about maybe 10 overall. Longtime family fastener business. Mm-hmm. I've been out of it for many years, as has my immediate family. I'm here with my sister, Virginia Cohn, and her husband, Andy Cohn, who own Dunk and Bolt.
Oh, and we know Andy Cohn
very
well.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So, a little fact about Dunk and Bolt. It was started at the very end of World War II by Dave Duncan, who, with a very small amount of money, purchased a few surplus pallets of something from the Army surplus that they were auctioning off. And he opened them up, and they were nuts and bolts. And he started selling them around Southern California. And I would say there were still some of those pallets in the Dunk and Bolt inventory as recent as 10 years ago.
Cameron Dorsey, National Sales Manager from Beacon Fasteners and Components.
All right, we're just almost finishing our NFDA 50th anniversary event. Tell me, what was the most fun thing you did?
To this point, I would say the flotilla. It's my first time being part of it, having 50 or 60 people drinking in the pool, all hanging together, networking, socializing, more socializing than networking. Mm-hmm. Very relaxing. This is a beautiful place. Weather was gorgeous, and what better to be around some of your peers.
No, that's absolutely true. All right, so now, so they don't think all we did was fun, what was the best work-related event?
The roundtable discussions. I enjoy those in different other associations, and it's the first time in a while since NFDA did it, and it was good having peer-to-peer learning, sharing best practices, and we were, you know, talking about the future at NFDA. They wanted to know what we want to see more, so they were definitely, the current board was taking feedback from their members to, you know, help improve the experience for everybody's businesses.
Whether you need a small or large number of fasteners, there is no reason why you should have to sacrifice quality or service for that matter. Volt Industrial Plastics takes great care with each and every order to ensure you receive a quality fastener in a timely and affordable manner. Our state-of-the-art production equipment allows us to produce any quantity you request quickly and efficiently. And with same-day shipping on nearly 1 million in-stock fasteners, we carry an inventory so you don't have to. Visit us online at voltplastics.com to find out more about our quality American-made products. Volt Industrial Plastics, manufacturer of the finest plastic fasteners in the world.
Since 1905, Buckeye Fasteners and the Ohio Nut and Bolt Company have been supplying the world with high-quality fasteners. Our standard product lines include weld fasteners, graded weld screws, leg levelers, self-clinching hardware, clevis pins, rivet nuts, and various other fastener lines, allowing us to support virtually all types of industries. We have complete custom manufacturing capabilities in low carbon, medium carbon, and stainless steel materials, and our quality systems are registered to ISO standards. Our on-staff engineering department can assist you with product development and provide total technical support. Our knowledgeable sales team members offer superior customer service and are here to answer any questions you may have regarding our products. Having a hard time finding a part? Let our sourcing specialist do the work for you to locate those items. We offer competitive pricing with typically smaller minimums and shorter lead times. To find out more about Buckeye Fasteners, please call us at 800-437-1689 or on the web at buckeyefasteners.com. Buckeye Fasteners, more than just weld.
This is Paula Evitz, MWFA Fastener Show Chairman, inviting you to join us June 4th for our 37th Annual Fastener Show. This year's show will be at Belvedere Banquets in Elk Grove, Illinois. This event is produced by the fastener industry for the fastener industry. Its success returns to the industry through scholarships, education, and informative programs. Also join us for the largest fastener industry golf outing the following day. More details of these events can be found at MWFA.net. Hope to see you there.
I know my customers' yearly usage, but I don't have the warehouse space to store it.
Solution Man can submit a blanket order, and I'll not only set up release dates, I'll offer you bulk pricing too. Visit the Solution Industries website for details at solutionind.com.
You're my fastener superhero.
Just doing my job, ma'am.
This is Mike McNulty from Fastener Technology International, coming to you straight from the Fastener Hall at the Wire Trade Fair in Dusseldorf, Germany. I'm not able to deliver the Fastener News Report this month, but I am still focused on fasteners and ready to hand the microphone back to Brian and Eric.
Brian and Eric, back with you. Well, as mentioned, Mike McNulty has the episode off. He's headed off to, or he actually already headed off to Dusseldorf, Germany, where he's participating in the International Wire and Cable Trade Fair. You've probably spent a lot of time out there in Dusseldorf, haven't you, Bri?
Yes. Yeah, Dusseldorf is one of the places where they have these things where they call a Messe. Messe would be, I don't know, it means an exhibition or a show or something in English. It's no exact translation, but Dusseldorf is one of the big cities for them.
In Europe, they call what we call trade shows, they call them fairs. So maybe that's German for fair. Don't know, but if you're looking for fastener industry headlines beyond the scant few we're going to present right here, get out to fastenertech.com. The Fastener News Report is available online on their website in PDF and flipbook editions. Mike does a great job with that every month, so take a look. That's fastenertech.com. Everybody's talking about the tariffs still, Bri, as you know. That was the buzz at the Cleveland show, and Fastener News Desk has a link to a direct source. Did you get out there and take a look at this U.S. Department of Commerce document, Bri?
I try and avoid government documents as best I can, okay?
Yes. I don't blame you. I tried to wade through a little bit of it, but we figured we'd point this out simply as a service to the industry. If you want to take a look at this. The title of the document is The Effects of Imports of Steel on the National Security. And this was from January 2018. Again, available right off the homepage of fastenernewsdesk.com. I wonder how many fastener people have actually delved into that.
Yeah, a few, I would think. I mean, there's so many ifs and buts and exceptions and shit that it's... who knows who it was really written for, okay?
Charlie Kerr has.
Okay. Right. We'll get Charlie to summarize it for us.
Good idea. Another headline we wanted to point out, many of you who have listened to Fully Threaded for some time know Dan Zender real well. He did our Legends of the Industry series, which I don't think is finished, Bri. I think it's just on a little hiatus. He'll be back one of these days with more interviews with fastener industry legends. And he's well on his way to achieving that status himself because we received a press release dated March 23rd. Dan Zender, of course, the CEO of Trinity Logistics. And we want to congratulate him because that company has been acquired by AgriSolutions, Bri.
Oh.
Which is a division of Hamilton, Ontario-based Venanapri Group. If I'm pronouncing that, I probably am not. But anyway, it's AgriSolutions, Canadian company, acquires Trinity Logistics Corporation.
Well, no wonder Dan looked so relaxed. I mean, I would have thought that's right in the middle of those negotiations, but he he looked better than we've known him for a long time.
Yeah, so, that well-rested glow. Yes, that would explain part of it, I believe, Bri.
Right. Now, I understand, okay?
Yeah. Jackie got a text from him. I think it was like the first day that they were down in Costa Rica, and he was complaining because the wind had blown the umbrella out of his drink, you know? Those are the kinds of things he has to worry about these days.
Right, I know. Though that all that we would have such problems, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, hang tight, Bri. Our time will come.
Okay, good. I'm very patient.
Yes. So congratulations to Trinity Logistics. I guess the management team will remain in place, and they're going to continue driving, and we'll keep you abreast with that. Here's a headline from the recent Fastener Fair USA in Cleveland. We previewed Fastener Fair and pointed out that EFC International was raffling off, or actually it was not really a raffle, it was just a put your card in the fishbowl kind of a contest, and you could win an Epiphone guitar Les Paul model signed by Gravity Kills guitarist and EFC president Matt Dudenhofer. Well, that went down. And I have to tell you, Bri, when they announced over the PA the winner, my heart stopped for just a minute.
Yeah, why?
Well, because the winner of that guitar, he's the purchasing manager over at Kimball Midwest. They're out of Columbus, Ohio. Well, he won't be having to purchase any guitars in the near future. He's Eric Scherer. Congratulations, Eric, on winning that guitar from EFC.
Wow, cool. Great.
Yeah, they had it set up in their booth, and I must say it was a very handsome-looking axe. I didn't actually know that Epiphone had a Les Paul version. I mean, everybody knows the Gibson Les Paul, but apparently Epiphone has one as well, and I tell you, it was a really nice-looking guitar.
I did not get to see it, but I'll take your word for it, okay?
Yeah, I felt real bad for EFC because apparently their crate with all their exhibit stuff was lost in transit somehow.
Oh, God, this is everyone's worst nightmare.
Oh, it is. It is. I mean, that's the worst thing that can happen at a trade show, pretty much. And so credit goes to Joyce over there because she scrambled and next day aired out a sign. And, you know, they had some tables set up and it was obvious that it was EFC and so forth. But, yeah, it was probably not what they were hoping for, especially with this big guitar giveaway. I think they made the best of it, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is what you dread when you turn up to try and set your booth up that something isn't there that you critically need, like you brought your computer but forgot the keyboard.
I remember that year.
Oh, yes, right. Or the mouse or whatever. Yeah, I know these things. But not having any of the stuff for your booth arrive would be a nightmare, a disaster.
Yep. Well, good job, Team EFC, and congratulations, Eric Scherer.
Yeah.
Couple of events that are coming up you should be aware of before we get to the FDI report. The NCFA Distributor Social is happening May 17th in Independence, Ohio. That's a great event. There will be something north of 200 fastener industry people there, mainly from the Midwest. You're welcome wherever you are, though. That's the case also at the MWFA Tabletop, which is happening June 4th and 5th in fabulous Elk Grove Village, Illinois. Strategically nearby O'Hare Airport, if you want to fly in. It's always a very good tabletop.
It is. Not that we're biased, okay?
MWFA is our home association. If you do business in Mexico or in South America, you should make it a point to get out to Fastener Fair Mexico. This time it's happening in Guadalajara. Previously it had been in Mexico City, now Guadalajara. That's happening June 20th through the 21st. Fastenerfair.com is where you get more info on that.
Yep.
The last one we'll mention for now, make sure you get all your shipping documents correct so you don't have any mishaps with your crates or anything, because you're not going to want to miss the International Fastener Exposition, otherwise known as the Vegas Show. That's happening October 30th through November 1st, Bri. So we're going to have to start planning, or maybe we should get Lynn to help us start getting our costumes ready for that. It's happening on Halloween this time.
Oh, yeah, you're right. This is a problem with timing, with dates.
Yeah, I think a few people are a little upset by it, frankly. But on the other hand, I think it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. I mean, I would be shocked if Emerald doesn't do something to really leverage that Halloween theme. I think it's going to be a unique Vegas show.
Yeah, maybe. I will not be in costume, okay? Just now, public announcement on my behalf.
Oh, I haven't begun to work my persuasive magic yet, Brad.
You can't be that good, okay? I've known
maybe
you too long.
Maybe we should start a Twitter campaign, everybody, to get Brian some ideas on what he should be for. Maybe how about Crocodile Dun- Nah, too obvious.
Yeah, no, we don't want that. I could find the right hat, though, with the corks all around it.
We're going to work on it. Hey, everyone. The Fastener News Report is normally brought to us by Volt Industrial Plastics and Fastenal. This time, we're just going to say Fastener Distributor Index Report is sponsored by Volt and Fastenal. Thank you very much.
What?
I was really happy to get back together with David Manthey, and as usual, he gives us a very precise and insightful analysis. We'll get to that in just a moment.
Well, he's lived this survey for a while, okay? He should know it backwards, and he's the guy who dreamed up the whole idea of having the forward-looking index too, isn't he?
That is correct. He's got a lot of passion for this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we're so fortunate to have Dave Manthey of R.W. Baird as the head analyst for the FDI. The title sponsors of Fully Threaded Radio are Stealthfast and Lindstrom. Get with us anytime, folks. The email address, ftr@fullythreaded.com, and the Twitter on handle is fullythreaded. Our feature segment covering Fastener Fair USA, which just happened, is up after this. But now let's play the conversation with Dave Manthey covering the March FDI numbers.
Yep.
The Fastener Distributor Index reading for March 2018 was 59.5, seasonally adjusted. This number was down slightly after February's reading of 60.4. The FDI is a collaboration of R.W. Baird and the FCH Sourcing Network with support from the National Fastener Distributor Association. It tracks industry sentiment and performance with a monthly diffusion index, which is derived from a survey we conduct with North American fastener distributors. Dave Manthey is a senior analyst with R.W. Baird, and since he took over the reins of the analysis side of the FDI, we've seen several important improvements to the index, including the addition of the forward-looking indicator. It's been a long while since he's joined us on the podcast, but he's with us today, and we're honored to have him. Dave Manthey, thanks for joining us on Fully Threaded.
Thank you, Eric. Good to be here.
It's been way too long.
It has. Good to be back, though.
It is. So we saw a little bit of a downtick, nothing too dramatic. What do you make of the March reading?
Well, the 59.5 that we saw in March, seasonally adjusted, is still well above 50, which signals continued expansion. It's really very much in the ballpark of recent trends, January and February, both right in that 60 range. And if you look at the last 12-month average was 59.4, so 59.5 is almost dead on that number. The first quarter of 2018 average was just over 60, which is the highest first quarter in the history of the survey and well above the 55 and change we saw in the first quarter of 2017. Year to date, these readings are very consistent with what we've seen in the ISM PMI, which was also in the 59 to 60 range year to date, and what we've seen from other distributors like Fastenal, which has seen double-digit organic average daily sales growth for about 10 straight months. So overall, we certainly continue to see a favorable backdrop for fasteners with trends seemingly sustainable as we move through 2018.
And that would seem likely because of the forward-looking indicator that I mentioned a moment ago. That number looked real strong again, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, Eric. That's, as you mentioned, we have about 5 years of historical data here when we put this indicator together, and it's a combination of four of the facets of the survey. But when you put it all together, it gives a pretty good representation of forward-looking trends in the fastener industry. It actually leads the FDI by a month or so. And leads market trends. The March seasonally adjusted forward-looking indicator was 59.9. That was up just a touch from February, and it represents the strongest seasonally adjusted March reading ever, with the first quarter average here of the FLI also a record in the first quarter at 61. Gains were primarily driven by lower inventories at the customer level, the theory being if demand remains strong, those customer inventories are going to have to move up, which drives incremental demand. We've also seen a bullish six-month outlook from the respondents and a consistently strong hiring sentiment, which is helping to drive those strong results. So bottom line, the forward-looking indicator, along with supportive end market demand, we think market conditions are likely to remain solidly in growth mode here over the coming several months.
Now, one of the components of the FDI is pricing, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the comments that survey participants gave to us this time. But, boy, pricing was probably the leader in terms of optimism out there. I mean, what do you make of all this?
Right. So the commentary that we heard from respondents to the survey were mixed this month, and there was positive commentary mainly around current demand, and that was balanced out by some respondents expressing concerns over tariffs and the implication for pricing and margins. On the positive side, we heard responses like most customers are seeing increases in usage, lead times from suppliers are being extended, a very good month, that type of response despite some weather-related headwinds. Others, around the tariffs and the inflation more broadly, there are some concerns around uncertainty of how that's going to impact both demand and margins. One distributor commented they're seeing continued inflation on purchased product. It gives suppliers another reason slash excuse to raise prices, and it's very difficult for us to pass on price increases. And another commented similarly, during periods of increasing costs, distributors can be too slow to raise selling prices to reflect replacement costs. Although there's concern out there, I would say through our broader research here at Baird, not only have we heard very similar commentary around the strong demand environment, we've certainly been hearing that prices for most industrial products are on the rise. And while we've had heard plenty of concerns about potential demand destruction or timing of passing through those price increases to customers, the majority believe that most inflationary pressures will eventually be recaptured by distributors.
That's interesting. The FDI monitors privately held North American fastener distributors, of course, and Baird tracks publicly traded companies as well. So how is the FDI contrasting to what you're seeing with those publicly traded companies in the same space?
Yeah, I would say the most relevant would be Fastenal, who reported just last week first quarter results, and their March daily sales growth was up 11.4%, which was above our expectation. That includes very strong fastener growth of 12%, or about 9% if you look organically, excluding the Mansco acquisition. We continue to think Fastenal is going to grow double digits organically through the remainder of 2018. And one of the key themes on the recent conference call was the price increases that the company is seeing and their ability to pass them through. It sounds like there was a bit of a time delay between when they took price increases and have been able to pass them through. However, pricing has ticked up January to February, February to March, and is looking like in the second quarter is going to be even higher. So the company is raising prices. They are gaining traction. And as I said, I think most distributors, even though there's some hand-wringing about what's going on with the input cost increases, they're able to pass through those higher prices to the end-user customers.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. I know lots of FTR listeners are really looking for them, really for some level of leadership. Well, let's turn now and talk about employment. So we also ask respondents to comment on that. What did the FDI tell us in March about employment?
Well, the employment picture was pretty much unchanged in the month of March, mostly flat month to month, but it, like the index itself, remains at a very high level. About 29% of respondents indicated that hiring picked up in March relative to seasonal expectations. That was basically flat with February. The FDI employment index also flattish with February. And when we look at the broader employment situation in the U.S., even though the March U.S. jobs report was a little bit weaker than expected, on the manufacturing side, 22,000 jobs were added in March, and the number of manufacturing jobs that have been added over the past 12 months is about 232,000. So even though we may be approaching or maybe at full employment, it seems like there's continued incremental gains in employment at a very high level. That picture looks pretty good. And I like to think about those as long-term decisions. So when I see the FDI employment index being as high as it is and its impact on the forward-looking indicator, I think it has a positive outlook for the industry overall.
Well, we'll take it where we can get it. Keep throwing it on the pile. Let's talk about an issue that has a lot of people concerned, and there's a lot of talk about it. We just returned from the recent Fastener Fair USA in Cleveland, where people were discussing the big headlines about tariffs. Of course, a lot of it really hasn't been sorted out yet. But what are you hearing from your sources on the subject of the steel tariffs and then, of course, the finished goods tariffs that are still coming down the pike?
Yeah, I would say that the key point there, Eric, is similar to what we talked about with inflation. I think when people are thinking about inflation and higher prices generally, they're including not only raw materials inflation that we're seeing in many areas, but also the finished goods tariffs and what that might mean for the demand environment as well. And I think it's a similar outlook, is that with the exception of well, let me back up and say the most of the distributors that we've talked to think they can pass on the price increases ultimately that are derived from tariffs. And with the one question being around demand destruction, if those price increases are so high, and even if the fastener distributors are able to pass along those price increases to the finished good manufacturers, if the cost of those goods has to rise so much to maintain margins for the manufacturers because of the higher raw material input price increases, that could lead to some demand destruction where someone decides not to buy that incremental crane or that incremental tractor or earth mover. And that could lead to some fallout as it relates to the overall growth environment. Having said that, we haven't seen it yet. And having said that, we haven't yet seen the bulk of these tariff-related price increases. So we'll have to wait and see. But it seems like the biggest risk is demand destruction. But barring that, I think distributors will eventually be able to pass those tariff price increases on to customers as well.
Okay, well, that's a very measured response, and it makes a lot of sense. I'll tell you this, though, from just anecdotal conversations in the aisles of the trade show and elsewhere, actually. I mean, there's also sort of be it rational or not, a fear, I guess, or a concern of greater trade pressures in general, and nobody really knows what that means, but they fear it. I'll say that. You could feel it.
Yeah, that's understandable.
I'll also add that the next FDI survey that we'll be conducting, and that'll be for the April numbers, we're going to be adding a supplemental question to that survey, and it will have to do with the tariffs, what you're seeing, what you're expecting, and so forth. So please, FDI survey respondents, jump in next month for sure, and you always do such a great job for us. We have a really wonderful group of respondents, Dave, and if you're interested in participating in the Fastener Distributor Index on a monthly basis, we'd be glad to have you. If you're a North American fastener distributor, privately held company, get out to the website www.fdisurvey.com. The survey really only takes less than 2 minutes on a monthly basis, and your input is totally confidential and very much welcome. Dave Manthey, you're with R.W. Baird. You speak with companies all across the industrial plane, and you have a lot of information. What can you tell us just in general about the economy? What are we looking at? What are you watching?
Sure. When you look across the economic data in the U.S., we talked earlier about the ISM PMI in the high 50s and having been positive for 19 straight months, obviously a very strong environment broadly. Construction spending also very strong. When you look at the constituent parts of that, residential up about 9%, multifamily's a little bit flatter. But manufacturing structures, even though down a little bit year over year, about 5%, it picked up from January, so there's some hopeful signs there as well. And another one that I think is really interesting is industrial production. Now, this is February data, but up 2.5% year over year, seeing mostly accelerating year-to-year growth rates since August of 2017. And interestingly, the manufacturing capacity utilization is currently at 76.9. I went back and looked. That's the highest level we've seen in exactly 10 years.
Wow.
It's still below the psychologically important 80 level. But I think it definitely is creeping up, and it has some positive potential as we look forward. And then the broader regional Fed surveys and some other data that we look at, some of the other private companies we talk to, generally pretty good and looking for solid growth rates. So I agree with you, Eric. I think there is a lot of concern out there as it relates to how these either broad inflation or tariff-related price increases get passed on by distributors. But ultimately, the demand environment looks good as we sit here today, and I think most people, most distributors that we talk to are at least hopeful that they'll be able to resolve these near-term inflation issues over time.
Yes, let us hope so. By the way, do you by any chance know when that industrial capacity number was last at, that all-important 80 number?
I'd have to go back and look. It was probably not too much further back than 10 years. I would say it was probably 2007. You may not want to quote me on that. I'm not positive about that one.
Oh, sorry to put you on the spot. But thank you so much for giving it a try, for appearing on the podcast, and for all the great work that you do on the Fastener Distributor Index. You really do a service for the fastener industry along with your team, which includes Quinn Fredrickson. He's been on the podcast more recently. And so thank you so much, Dave Manthey with R.W. Baird.
Appreciate it, Eric. Thanks a lot. And I'll also say that I really look forward to next month and seeing what respondents have to say about the tariffs in the survey. So look forward to seeing that data. And thanks again, Eric. I really appreciate the time.
Once again, the FDI reading for March 2018 was 59.5 seasonally adjusted. We're dipping a little bit, but staying quite strong, well above the baseline 50 mark. Get out to www.fdisurvey.com to participate and to see the archive.
For a selection of hundreds of thousands of fasteners, check out your local Fastenal store or Fastenal.com. We can stock domestic or internationally sourced product locally and keep your bin stock filled for you at no additional expense. We are a 9001:2008 certified company that's made a huge investment in quality control so you don't have to. And if you can't find it on our shelf, we can make it for you at the quantity you need at one of our many manufacturing facilities. Learn more by contacting your local Fastenal store or visiting Fastenal.com today.
ND Industries has been solving customers' toughest problems through innovative technologies, competitive pricing, and industry-leading service since 1955. A family-owned business, ND Industries manufactures and applies fastener locking, bonding, sealing, masking, and assembling products. Their pre-application process makes fasteners ready to use at the point of assembly, resulting in reduced labor costs, time savings, and superior quality assurance.
As a fully integrated company, ND handles all aspects of operations from formulating custom chemical compounds and coating fasteners to providing inline inspection, packaging, and delivery services. ND Industry serves the global market with 13 divisions in the continental U.S. and also facilities in Taiwan, China, and Turkey. Learn more about ND Industries at our website at www.ndindustries.com. ND Industries, innovative technologies, competitive pricing, and industry-leading service. Contact ND today.
My customer sent me a print for a bolt specifically for the machine in his shop, but we can't make it.
Solution man, Ken. Provide me with a print, and my superhuman CNC machining team will custom make it for you faster than a manufacturer's rep drinking at an open bar. Visit the Solution Industries website for details at solutionind.com.
Wow, that is fast.
So are you at the distributive social, huh?
Hey everybody, this is Carmen Bertullo with your Fastener Training Minute. Today, interestingly enough, coming to you from the Industrial Fasteners Institute in beautiful Cleveland, Ohio, getting ready to go to the Fastener Show. It'll be over by the time you hear this. I hope I saw you there, and I hope you had a good time. Anyway, as you know, we have been talking about torque wrenches lately, and we're going to finish up that series today by giving you about six different tips on dealing with torque wrenches, helping your customers use torque wrenches, just a few facts that everybody should know to keep them out of trouble when it comes to applying torque to your fasteners. When we come back, we'll talk about that.
Thanks, Carmen. This is Joe Morris with the Fastener Training Institute. It is April, springtime, and a great time to invest in some fastener training. Did you know you can become a certified fastener specialist and take just one class per month? Each class includes a full day of instruction, training materials you can take back with you to your job, and a certificate of completion. There are seven courses. After completion of all seven classes and passing the final exam, you will receive an engraved plaque with CFS designation. Our first single day CFS class for 2018 is Fastener Manufacturing Plant Tours on April 17th in Los Angeles, California. During this class, you'll get an up-close look at fasteners being made. We will be touring Risco, R&D Fasteners, and B&B Specialties. This is really an extremely beneficial course for anybody in the fastener industry, and it's open to all, not just those seeking to become a CFS. So if you're interested, please sign up today to take advantage of our early bird tuition discounts. Also this month, the Fastener Training Institute is hosting two of our CFS 2.0 classes, Automotive Fastener Technology and Understanding Hydrogen Embrittlement in Fasteners. The curriculum focuses on case-based learning, where students work in teams to solve fastener-related problems that you face in your day-to-day jobs. Automotive Fastener Technology will be presented in Wixom, Michigan on April 30th through May 1st. This class is perfect for fastener manufacturers, service providers, tier suppliers, and OEMs who seek a better understanding of automotive fasteners. Instructors are Salim Brahimi and Lawrence Klaus, who will also be joined by Brian Lowry of Curtis Metal Finishing Company. Later the same week, on May 2nd through the 4th, also in Wixom, Michigan, Salim Brahimi and Carmen Vertullo will present Understanding Hydrogen Embrittlement in Fasteners. This, too, is a very, very hands-on class. Attendees will learn how to do hydrogen embrittlement testing and come away equipped to do it. Lastly, please don't forget about our April webinar, which is Socket Products, sponsored by Star Stainless. Socket products are some of our most popular and profitable fastening products in the industry. The more you know about them, the better you can serve your customers and realize the business opportunities with socket products. Carmen Vertullo will instruct this webinar on April 27th at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. To see a complete listing of all of our classes and webinars, please visit our website at www.fastenertraining.org. Now, back to Carmen.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Carmen Bertullo with the Carver Fact Center and the Fastener Training Institute. We're going to tell you six things about torque wrenches that you need to know. This is probably the minimum that everyone should know about torque wrenches, and this is how we're going to finish up our series on torque wrenches. So here we go, starting with number one. the type of torque wrench. Choosing your torque wrench is very important. There are two primary types, an indicating type and a control type. The indicating type tells you how much torque you've applied. We typically use that in laboratory testing. And the control type is the one that you use when you're applying torque to a fastener and you want to have a specific value of that torque applied. It's important when you choose a torque wrench that you choose the right range. In other words, if your torque is 100 foot-pounds, you probably want to choose a torque wrench that's about 200 foot-pounds, somewhere in the middle of the range. Buy the best tool that you can afford. Most torque wrenches have both units of measure, inch and metric, but be sure that if you're applying torque in the inch units of measure, that you have an inch torque wrench, and if it's in the metric units of measure, that you have that. Second, this is probably the most important of the six I'm going to tell you, training. You cannot properly use a torque wrench unless you've been trained. And torque is our friend, as long as we know the tool and we understand how it works. So if you're a supplier of fasteners and you want to get into supplying torque wrenches, you ought to be providing some training as well. Third, number three, take care of your torque wrench. That means you should store it properly. You should not use it or misuse it. Don't use it as a hammer or some other kind of wrench or to disassemble your work. And make sure you keep it in good calibration. Number four, always apply or read the torque when the wrench is in motion. That basically means don't creep up on it real close and then think you're going to be able to get the correct torque when you're pretty close to the end of the turning motion. You can maybe apply about 50% of the torque and then apply the rest so that your wrench is in full motion when you hit the click or the buzzer goes off or the needle hits where it's supposed to hit, depending on what kind you are using. Number five, use of extensions. The standard extension that sticks straight out from the drive of the torque wrench perpendicular to it will have no impact on your torque value, so you don't need to be concerned about that. But when you use some kind of a dog bone type extension or what's called a crow's foot in order to access a fastener that you wouldn't normally be able to get to, that does affect the torque because it makes the torque wrench longer. There's a little bit of math that goes into that. It's not hard to figure out. However, it's beyond the scope of this little episode. One thing that you can do, though, if you're using a crow's foot and it's not very long, less than an inch or two, just put it at 90 degrees to the torque wrench and it will not affect your torque value. Finally, number six, be aware of which component you are tightening, whether the nut or the bolt, and what's under that nut or bolt bearing surface. If you're tightening the head of the bolt, make sure the hardened washer is under there so you don't mess up the torque tension relationship. And if you're tightening the nut, the same thing. Make sure you have a good bearing surface or a hardened washer under the nut. Well, those were six tips to help you learn how to properly use a torque wrench. And if you'd like to have this in writing, just contact the Carver Fact Center at www.carverfact.com. Go to our website and let me know, and I'll be happy to send you our little six tips on how to properly use torque wrenches document. This has been Carmen Bertullo for the Fastener Training Institute. Thanks for listening.
This is Todd Walters with the Boulder Company, and you're listening to Fully Threaded Radio.
Well, here we are, moments before the opening of Fastener Fair USA, and of course, Melissa Magistro is with me. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Eric. Welcome to Fastener Fair.
Thank you. Can you believe it? Seems like just yesterday we were doing the meeting for all the prep on this. It's amazing.
I know. It's incredible. I've just been telling people how the level of support we've gotten for this show from the industry has been like almost a little bit overwhelming. You don't sometimes as a show organizer get that kind of welcome, I guess, in the industry. So it's been so great for us.
All I can say is, hello, Cleveland.
I know, right? Cleveland rocks.
Over here at the GL Hewitt booth with Dave Audia. Hey, Dave, the show's just getting underway. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think we're kind of excited this year to take a look at this. I mean, obviously, it's a show that, while it's been around, it's never been here. We've never done it. And for it to come to Cleveland, which is my hometown besides, we're pretty excited about it to see what kind of traffic we're going to get. A lot of exhibitors, probably more than we expected when we were first setting up yesterday, so we're excited to get going.
I agree with you. I mean, when we walked in here to set up our booth, I was impressed. I mean, the show looks good and the floor is full.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's just a little after 10 o'clock right now. We've already had about three or four people stop by with legitimate questions and you know, interested in seeing what GL Hewitt has to offer. So.
Well, and I also agree with you. It's cool to have it being held in our hometown of Cleveland, and I have to say that folks like ourselves who are from the area, we kind of feel that host feeling floating around.
Well, absolutely. I mean, let's face it, you know, we all go to the Vegas show nowadays, and that started in Ohio, a couple hours south of here.
True.
So, you know, it's nice to come back. There's a lot of manufacturing and distributor business for the industry here. It's in close proximity to the Chicagos and the Detroits of the world, so it's exciting.
Well, Dave Audia with GL Hewitt, have a great show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much.
Well, we're about an hour into the show, and here we are with Chris and Lisa from Hudson Fasteners and the Fastener News Desk. Hello, ladies.
Hey, Eric.
Hey, Eric. How are you today?
Outstanding. You're out here doing your job covering. Was that an amazing ribbon-cutting ceremony or what?
That was absolutely fantastic.
Well, what was even better, Eric, was that panel discussion, the future of the fastener industry. I think some pretty important subjects came up. We talked workforce. We talked technology. We talked
additive manufacturing.
And we had some good discussions. I think it was the time flew by, but we really want to dive a little bit deeper into some of those subjects.
Well, those are some of the subjects that are covered on Fastener News Desk on a regular basis. You're on the cutting edge, really, of, among other things, of additive manufacturing. And I think that's something that the fastener industry, frankly, is still a little bit in denial about.
That's absolutely 100%. They're a little bit afraid of it, which they don't need to be. What they need to do is do some research and homework on it, and they'll see that it will work to their advantage, and they really need to be part of it.
Yeah, I agree about that. And we'll talk to you ladies down the road. We got to get you on for a full segment. One thing before we let you go, though, did they have a huge table full of Long Johns at the meeting this morning?
No, they did not, but they should have.
All right, so McGuire and Bannister, ching on that one. Okay, we'll talk to you down the road, girls.
Take it easy, Eric. Have a great day.
What are we talking about? Of course, what Cleveland show would be complete without a conversation with R.L. English honcho Marty Nolan? Hey, Marty.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
It's kind of fun to have a show right here in our own backyard, huh? This is even better than it was in Columbus days.
Yeah, actually, I lived in Columbus back in the day, so even then I had to go home at night. Like, I went home last night, but not tonight. Tonight I'm staying out.
So we were saying just a minute ago that to evaluate a show like this, really only need to do the one thing. You need to measure what?
You need to have five good conversations, five meaningful, good, in-depth conversations, and it'll pay for your show. Talking to the right people in the right situation about the right thing, and it makes the show worth it.
Is it going to happen for you at Fastener Fair USA?
It will absolutely happen.
And I'm preventing you from doing that right now. So
you're one of the five. I can cross one off my to-do list.
Thanks for talking to us, Marty.
Sounds good. Thanks, Eric.
Ken Sanker, Blue Chip Engineering. Hey, man, welcome to Cleveland.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
What do you make of the show so far? It's still about halfway through only on the first day.
So far it's been pretty good, busy. Just snuck out for lunch, but come back, the show floor seems to be still busy.
Yep. Are you looking for anything special at this show or just seeing what's out here?
Just anything that's new and unique. That's our game.
Is people rumbling around about the tariff issue? I mean, what are you hearing on the floor about that or anywhere else for that matter?
There's a little bit of talk. There is. I'm sure people are still concerned about it. My main concern is find a place to park up here.
Thanks, Ken.
Yeah. See you.
Well, Bri, that was Ken Sanker at the Fastener Fair USA, which happened April 11th and 12th. It was great to see you out here, Bri.
It was. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think that you fell down the job, but actually you fell down on Lynn's job a bit. I mean, a bit of a dearth of recordings there. Lynn usually wanders around a bit more than you, I think.
I think we got what we needed.
Just a note. I just saying that. Okay?
Well, thanks to everybody who participated in our little montage gathering exercise there. And I think the worst thing that I heard about Fastener Fair USA was the parking. So, Ken, that's why I used that segment there right at the end. And fortunately, we heard lots of good things about Fastener Fair USA. Here to discuss that with us, to do a little bit of a show wrap-up, which is kind of a tradition here on the podcast. We have Jake Davis with BTM Manufacturing. Hey, Jake.
How are you guys?
Doing good, thanks, mate.
Great to be back on with you.
Good.
Good to have you. Also joining us is Rosa the Riveter Hearn, BBI Zone. Hey, Rosa.
Hello, Eric. Hello, Brian. And hello, Jake.
Yeah, hello. Now, I can't say mate to you because it doesn't work right, but welcome anyway, okay?
Thank you.
So I presume you are sitting here in California. I know it's all beautiful and everything. Oh. And have you got your little Rosa the Riveter outfit on? I keep imagining that, okay?
Only during Halloween, okay? Oh. So you'll see that. I'm actually tempted to be Rosa the Riveter for the the Vegas show, since it falls on Halloween.
Yeah, yeah. At the risk of jumping way ahead in the segment here, I was thinking something similar. Yeah, we're going to have some fun there. But the topic at hand is Fastener Fair USA, once again, which happened April 11th and 12th in Cleveland. It was a show that was really, I guess, driving quite a bit of conversation. People were wondering what was going to happen. And one of the reasons for that was the mix of advertised attendees, right? So it was supposed to be partly sort of a Vegas light, and then it was also going to be attracting OEMs and different sectors or different areas of the fastener industry from what we usually see with this typical crowd. Rosa, let's throw it over to you first for your reactions. How do you think it measured up to those expectations, and just how was the show in general?
Well, I'm a little biased, and the reason I say that is because I actually worked with the same crew at Fastener Fair Mexico. So I was there from the beginning, and so I knew, you know, how they worked. I knew what they were able to deliver. I knew what the expectation was. So I was really excited when they decided to do a Fastener Fair USA. I was actually a very huge promoter to our company, saying, you know, we need to be in this show. And sure enough, you know, we exhibited not only as, you know, Bright and Best Preferred, but also for women in the fastener industry. So I had two exhibits going, as well as two educational seminars going.
Yep. So from your point of view, or from Bright and Best point of view, I mean, the big issue, which was, you know, the stumbling block, was this horrific idea, which you might actually have OEMs in the same room as people who actually distribute and sell fasteners. It always seemed to me to be such a crazy non-issue, I couldn't understand it. However, that was the unspoken problem. Did you see that as a problem?
No, not at all. First of all, on the badges, I don't know if you noticed, but each of them actually said, instead of saying your basic visitor, it actually did say if they were an end user or a distributor or an exhibitor. So they were actually very detailed on the badge themselves.
That was a great idea.
Yeah, I know. I agree. Yeah. And how many end users did you actually see walking around?
When on the Brighton booth, hardly any.
Yeah.
And on the Wi-Fi booth, we even had the buyer from Volvo actually wanted to become a member. So, you know, we did see a lot of end users coming to the Wi-Fi booth, but not to the Brighton booth.
I didn't see a lot of end users. Actually, I think the whole thing was a giant, like a storm in a teacup. I thought it was a slightly wider version of the people we usually see at a show.
If I had an estimate, it was probably would be like 10% would probably be end users. Pretty much, you know, 80% of it was, you know, distributors.
I think that was pretty widely shared, that view of it, guys. And just so you know, again, the show is run by Mack Brooks. Now, they're very well known for running some of the largest fastener shows throughout the world outside the U.S., so this is their first foray into the U.S. market. Got some numbers here, the published number of attendees, which isn't official yet, but it's something over 2,000, and they're still going over their registration records, according to Jessica Bowick over there. They had about 255 booths. So that was the size of the show, and we could easily go off into that subject of the OEM idea, but it sounds like it was almost verging on a non-event. Jake Davis, BTM Manufacturing, what was your overall impression of Fastener Fair USA?
Well, this was kind of I decided kind of late December just to come and walk the show. I didn't choose to exhibit just because I felt it was a little bit late in the game. And I just kind of wanted to see what it was about. You know, again, who was going to be there, who, you know, the whole distribution OEM aspect of it. So for all that I've been doing with BTM over the past 3 to 5 years, we've been exhibiting at all the shows, you know, the Vegas and regional shows. So here I was, you know, walking the show, just a completely different aspect of it.
Where did you park?
No, well, I didn't have to worry about that, thankfully. So Uber did a great job of getting me to and from the airport to downtown. So I didn't have that issue. I didn't really have any issues. I thought, you know, from a schedule standpoint, it was they did a good job of putting the show together. From everybody that I talked to, from a show management standpoint, they did a good job. I liked the panel discussions. I was involved in the speed networking event put on by YFP on Wednesday afternoon, and then I went to the Future of Sales by Paul Riley on Thursday morning.
He's an amazing man, that man. Okay.
Yeah, he did a great job. I you know, he got started about 10:15 and went to about, you know, 11:10, 11:15. So it's just a very, you know, you can always learn and grasp one or two things from him when he speaks. I think last time I heard him speak was at STAFTA in Atlanta. So I thought the show overall, I think, was well done. I think the Wednesday night event, I think it professionally, it went very good, in my opinion. We got other things that we can talk about a little bit later, but overall, I would probably give it a B.
Okay. That's not too bad. Now, especially first attempt. Now, we were there at the end of the 400 aisle FCH sourcing network with our fancy new booth, which, good job on that, Bri. I mean, I think we can give ourselves a pat on the back. We were right across from the Ernst Machine booth, which was a pretty sizable booth. And Ernst, of course, was a gold sponsor of Fastener Fair USA. They put a lot into it, including sponsoring that seminar area. And
yeah,
so we had a bird's eye view of that. I tell you, the quality of the speakers, very impressive, and the attendance, in contrast to what we sometimes see in Vegas, where, let's face it, I mean, it's just a couple of people there. I mean, whatever they did it right.
Right. There were plenty of people. It was actually quite good to see, because you're right, normally Vegas is like one person or two people, and it's a bit, you're embarrassed for the person speaking, actually. But
yeah, both of our events were well attended, so I was very excited about that.
Actually, we were exactly across from an Italian company, Stampinox or something like that, which we got to know the two guys in there. And interestingly, we had a Spanish company on our just next to us, and next to them was a French company, and then over from us was an Italian company. So it was quite a different set of people to what we usually have in Las Vegas. And it was fun to talk to them all, actually.
Yeah, and I think all of them went to Mabel's Barbecue on Wednesday.
I know,
too,
yeah.
Because
of
you, Bri.
Right. So this is the deal, okay? I love barbecue, and Eric and Jackie took me out to a barbecue restaurant, which they say is very good, and it's known for brisket. So I spent my time convincing people that if they got sort of a little bit bored for the show or they needed a break to go off and have barbecue. And Vic from Cambridge, I suggested to go there, and my mate from Vertex Distribution. Everyone came back and said, oh, great idea, thanks.
Well, if the whole FCH thing doesn't pan out for us, Bri, you've always got a future in restaurant promotion, apparently.
I know, and I talked the Italians over the often to going to there as well.
Well, let's spin through the show chronologically. And I know both you, Rosa, and Jake, you attended the informal pre-show party, which happened Tuesday evening, somewhere called the Punch Bowl, which I was not able to attend. What was that like?
Well, I did attend, and I thought it was actually great. It was my first time in Cleveland. I didn't realize how great Cleveland was, actually.
You know,
I was blown away, believe it or not. I mean, coming from California, it's all sunny and nightlife here, and, you know, there's always something to do. But, you know, I arrived, and the first thing I wanted to do was go to the Christmas Story House, and so I did that. And then, got to my booth, you know, set up my booth, and then went straight to the Punch Bowl. And it was fun. You know, I got to meet people that I would normally not see. Some people don't get to go to Vegas. Some people, because it's so in the West Coast, they don't attend. So I felt like I met a brand new crowd.
Yeah, it's true. You did. And you had some fun. And you're right. Cleveland is a sort of an interesting city for those people who, you know, you're not that familiar with it.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised.
I was planning on getting to the Punch Bowl. I got in I got in around 10 Cleveland time, Eastern time, and I had texted Tracy with a link and just to kind of see where everybody was at, and everybody seemed to have dispersed the Punch Bowl. So I just kind of checked in and checked out Roof 32 at the downtown Hilton, which was completely swamped with some other type of convention. So I met a couple guys at the bar, and you know, one was there for an interview, and one guy was there for work. So we talked a little bit of baseball, and then I had some Fastener friends show up a little bit later.
Yeah, that 32nd floor on the Hilton is a great place, and of course that's going to make another appearance in our conversation because that was a place a lot of people met Wednesday. So then skipping ahead to Wednesday morning, there was a panel discussion before the show opened, and the show opened at 10 a.m., that's on the 11th of April, and I was there for the ribbon cutting. Rosa, I noticed you got into the VIP position there next to Melissa and a cast of others. Bob GQ Bear was there, Larry Kelly, a few others. How'd you get wound up in that?
Well, you know, I don't know if people know this, but actually in the previous years, Fastener Fair USA was actually planned probably 2 or 3 years ago, and they actually had a Fastener committee. So, and every year was different, but I was very fortunate enough to be in those committees all through those 3 years. And then come, you know, Fastener Fair time, they asked me to, you know, be part of it since I helped them, you know, build it.
During your tenure on that committee, was John Grabner ever involved from Cardinal Fasteners?
I don't know.
Well,
no.
You would remember.
Yeah, right.
I participated in an early meeting, and he was there, and I thought that was really strange. I didn't know what his involvement was, but he was definitely there. And then on Thursday, the second day of the show, as things were really thinning out, lo and behold, there he walked down the aisle. And I didn't get a chance to catch him because I was with somebody in my booth, but I did see John there. Well, you did a good job, whatever you did, with your recommendations. I wasn't involved later as the committee progressed. We won't speculate as to why, but you were there at the ribbon cutting, and Melissa gave her welcome talk, and I guess one of the partners from Mack Brooks cut the ribbon.
Right. He was from Europe. He was from the original corporate office of Mack Brooks.
Rosa, did you get to keep part of the ribbon?
Yes, I did.
That's awesome.
And honestly, it's my second one. I did the inaugural for Fastener Fair Mexico as well. So I actually have it framed in my office. So.
You're a veteran. Thanks.
I'm glad we got to interview you then. I mean,
we are not worthy.
We're all not novices then. God. Okay.
Yeah. They just really wanted, you know, an idea of what was missing in the industry, you know, and there was a pretty good group, a variety of group, people in secondary processing, manufacturing, distribution, people that focused on end users, people that focused on distribution. So what I liked about it was that they listened to everybody. You know, whether it was good, bad, or indifferent, you know, they listened. And the fact that they kept up a committee, whether it was different people or different opinions, I mean, to me, that matters. You know, communication is, it's what the industry needs and what the industry wants. And they, to me, I thought they came through.
Yeah. I thought the show, from the 50,000-foot view, it was really well organized. I mean, just things that normally are a big nightmare, were just, everything was done right, you know. It was just really nicely organized. You need to find someone in show management, zing. You could find them instantly instead of, you know, waiting for 3 hours to catch them driving around in a cart or something.
Yeah, I would reiterate what Brian said. I heard that numerous times, you know, from an aspect of dealing with show management was, yeah. One, they were around, and two, the flip side of that was you got your request, your question was dealt with immediately. There wasn't, you know, a lull. And so, you know, like I said, I heard very positive comments when it came to the management of the show and how they work hand in hand with the exhibitors. So good job on that end.
I just looked at an employee and they immediately came over and asked if I needed anything. I mean, that happened to me like 3 times within an hour. So I just thought they were marvelous over that.
Well, I could look at one and they wouldn't come near me. So that's okay. There's other things going on here, Rosa, okay?
That's regardless of show management, though, Brian.
Right.
Well, that's ribbon cutter versus non-ribbon cutter, Brian.
I know. Yeah, right. So I'll crawl down in my little hole again.
And I'd have to say that the participation on the advisory committee might also explain that cherry location that you got for BBI, because you were right there when the doors opened. And if there were 2,000-plus attendees, something like, I don't know, 50 or 60% of them probably came down that way in the first hour and a half of the show, so you must have been inundated, so that's great. Hey, one other thing about the Mack Brooks management team, I agree, they're super easy to work with. And Melissa and Jessica, I talked with them briefly at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame after party on that first day, and they made a comment that really also struck me, and that was they realized that the U.S. fastener industry is driven by relationships. Their words. And I thought that was very, very astute of them. And if they're going to succeed at this, it takes that to understand it.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. That's, you know, that's why I went. I could have easily just sat at home, but it had been a while since I had seen all my, you know, fastener friends. So I just, you know, it was kind of I needed to see what it was like and judge for myself if it was something that we wanted to invest in. But two, it's a relationship business, you know, not only as a supplier manufacturer, but on the distributor side as well. So it just puts you back in touch face to face with all the people, you know, you love to work with.
Right. I think there's another whole issue going on here, which is like the fact that, you know, if you really talk to people, there are a lot of people who are sort of not in favor of the Las Vegas show. They're not because it's simply because of the place. They're sick of Las Vegas. Okay. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who could think of a million places they'd prefer to go to in the US other than Las Vegas. And these people think longingly back to the days when there used to be a Columbus show. So, I believe there's still a view that either two shows on different sides of the country are a good idea, or that, you know, there should be increased emphasis on a East type show.
Well, you forget the Vegas show, which now we call it a generic Vegas show, starting in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah,
that was the original show.
Yeah.
And then once the economy did well, once everything was really good, you know, they started an East and a West. And then during the downturn, that's when they decided, okay, we got to narrow back to one, and then they kept Vegas.
Right.
So originally, it was in the Midwest.
See, I would have been just as happy if they'd kept one show and it was in Ohio, actually, for me personally, okay?
Well, Brian, we got involved in the fastener industry just as Columbus was kind of trailing off. I attended the last couple of them. One year they actually even skipped it. That was during the financial meltdown. I forgot, was it 06 or 07? And then they finally just wound it all down. Well, that's a whole other discussion, because a lot of folks are questioning the role of regional shows, and we certainly can do that in a minute. I'd like to finish recapping the show. Day one, Wednesday, was a whirlwind. I think everyone was satisfied with the traffic, and when the show closed down, we were whisked off very efficiently, I might add, on the fleet of buses that were waiting about a mile away, maybe less, over to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That party started at 5 p.m. And, of course, as soon as we walked in to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think Solution Industries made a pretty big score, because there on the music stage was Solution Man and his female counterpart. I don't know what they call her, but so the music began and it was a pretty good party.
I thought they did a great job. Just a quick story on that. I had met, you know, we had kind of went to the bar there in the Hilton afterwards just to have, you know, quench our thirst as we kind of waited for some others. And so we made our way downstairs and just kind of following the crowd, right? And so OJ with Stelfast, we're just kind of moseying towards these buses and literally get on the complete wrong shuttle buses. They're like, you know, the really nice limousine-looking shuttle buses.
Yeah, like you're used to, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, probably OJ is used to that. So we just get on him, and I kind of asked the driver, I said, you know, where are you headed? You know, and he said, you know, Vandalay Industries or something like that. And that's like, you're not going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? He's like, no. And so, you know, all of us had to pretty much get off of the bus and then, you know, make our way back over to the convention center and get on the right bus. So who knows where we would have ended up, but I thought it was a great event. I wasn't there all that long, so I can't speak to the hours of it, but to be able to have access to it and, again, relationship-wise, be able to meet and enjoy the social aspect of what we do, surrounded by that historical aspect of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, was a pretty cool deal.
Yes, I thought it was a great turnout. You know, a lot of people showed up. That place is so huge. I mean, what is it, 10 stories? I mean, it took an hour just to even, like, find somebody because it was so big. But it was fantastic. You know, they had VIP, so people had free drink tickets, free meal tickets. So I just thought it was a great event.
Cleveland was ramping up for the Hall of Fame induction ceremony, which happened that weekend. And, of course, there was a lot of buzz about possibly running into one of the big stars. I didn't hear any reports of that, but you could see everything getting set up outside with the metal detectors and everything. I don't know. Made it a little more exciting, maybe. But we did have a star within the fastener industry up on stage. I mentioned Solution Man was on stage. It turns out Laura Vath's son, Tim, who works, I believe he's the controller, perhaps, of Solution Industries. He was actually playing bass in the band. And his brother, who does not work in the industry, he was the drummer. So the rhythm section was Solution Industries wall to wall. They did a nice job. Whether or not the music was my cup of tea is another thing, but they were competent and they were loud. And so a lot of people were down in the lower level and partying it up, plus the whole joint was filled with fastener people, and it was surprising that even though there were that many stories that you could be on, it was wall-to-wall fastener people. You never stopped making contacts.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, I didn't realize it was, like Rosa said, when I first looked at it, I could see it from my hotel room, and I thought it was pretty small, but you know, once you get inside there and realize it's like 8 stories high, you know, worth of exhibits and that, I was shocked. I just thought it was kind of rinky dink at first. And then I was like, oh, wait a second. This thing goes down. It goes up. You know, there's halls everywhere. So
did you vote for the next, you know, inductee?
I did not.
I didn't know that was an option. Where were the ballots?
It was like on the fourth floor. It was a computerized monitor, and you punched in your email, your name, and you vote.
So I who'd you vote for?
Oh, that's a secret.
Yeah, you're not supposed to ask those things, Jake.
My apologies.
Thank Floyd. Yeah.
Do you need an ID to vote in Cleveland?
No, they have certain rules. You know, they had to be playing for, like, I think 20 years. They had to, you know, they had to meet certain standards. So you couldn't just pick Taylor Swift, for example. You know, they would actually tell you Taylor Swift will be available in 2029. So actually, okay. No, really. And so you would have to pick somebody that, you know, met those requirements.
You know, at the risk of completely running this conversation into a different direction, we've been talking about the Fastener Hall of Fame off and on the podcast for the longest time. And of course, the Fastener Industry Coalition has responsibility for nominating and electing the Hall of Famers, and that's a whole issue unto itself. But what if there was some component like that with the Fastener Hall of Fame? I mean, shouldn't the industry have a little bit of say?
Yeah, shouldn't it?
Well, they do. You know, you're able to nominate, and then the Fastener Industry Coalition actually will pick from those nominations. And we have policies and procedures in place, so that way it's fair, it's voted fairly, and that's how we actually get our inductee.
So it's not mob rule when it comes to the Fastener Industry Hall of Fame. That's what you're getting at. It's more like a representative republic in that sense. Okay, well, that's good to know.
The only thing is you have to nominate them.
So what's the mechanism for doing that?
Well, that's widely known, Bri. You probably haven't been listening to Fully Threaded Radio closely enough, I would say.
Right, I haven't. I'm just,
he's just a co-host. He's not. Yeah.
Right. I need to get onto this game.
Well, as the Hall of Fame event wound down, a lot of people had customer dinners, went off in their different directions, but there were a whole group of us that reunited later that night at the aforementioned 32nd floor bar at the Hilton. That was really cool. Saw you up there, Jake. You were hanging out with, at the time I met you, you were with Wayne Wishnew of XL Screw.
Yeah, sitting down, catching up with Wayne. So I enjoy it. Like I said, just you guys know I'm a big relationship guy when it comes to our industry. So just the opportunity to get out and, you know, hook back up with everybody and have an opportunity to talk and that. And just enjoy the heck out of it.
I thought it was just that you got thirsty quite often.
No, that's part of it as well.
Oh, okay.
I run from place to place.
I can tell. I know. Yeah, right.
That explains the camelback.
Right.
A group of us were actually at a different bar in a restaurant, and then we were told that the happening place was at the Hilton at the 32nd floor, so we needed to check it out. And sure enough, there was tons of Fastener people there, so it was nice to see them.
Yeah, that was rocking till after 1 a.m., which is when I checked out, and I guess it was pretty obvious the next day who left after me. Enough said on that. So then Thursday, it was, I would say, adequate, but like all the shows, it tends to get a little bit lighter in attendance. However, the quality from the standpoint of the FCH booth was still spot on. I mean, I talked to people from bell to bell.
That's great. You know, again, I mentioned I did the future of sales with Paul Riley, and then I caught one of Rose's events with the creating your own brand, and then had lunch, and then I came back and walked for maybe another 30, 45 minutes and just kind of said my goodbyes as I needed to get to the airport. You know, day two of any show is a struggle. I don't know the behind-the-scenes aspect of it, you know, what all these convention centers and places require people to have. You know, they want those extra nights of hotel or whatever. I don't know. But day two always, you know, just struggles. But there were, you know, in the morning, I think there was some traffic there, but it was pretty light when I left about 2.
Now, you were walking the floor pretty aggressively, and so you set yourself up for this question, Jake, but I noticed that there weren't quite as many kegs available on the floor as there are in Vegas. I mean, did that have anything to do with your leaving a little early?
It plays into it a little bit. I did. I'm trying to think. There was a surface, a plating company right there in front that had the huge cap screw or socket, and I somehow stumbled over there. I had, you know, my finger was bleeding for some reason, so I stumbled over there and got a napkin at their bar, and I just stood there long enough, and thankfully the lady gave me a couple. So, you know,
come for the napkin, stay for the beer.
Yeah, that's exactly. A really good excuse. I never thought of that one.
No, you might try that one, Bri.
I know. Yeah, usually I'm waiting for Eric to try and bring me one, okay, because I'm stuck in the booth. He's just getting around everywhere.
Well, we know how that winds up, right?
Yeah, I know. I'm thirsty. I know.
Yeah, we actually had a different reaction for ours. So for the Brighton booth, I actually asked, because we have a location in Cleveland, and we're making a new building, by the way. I believe it's like 209,000 square feet. I asked the women of Brighton if they can come and work the Wi-Fi booth on the second day, and they were actually repossessed by the Brighton staff at the booth because they had an overflow of people coming in and they needed the help. So, wow. You know, yeah.
That's good. It's a good
Brighton moment at the second day because everybody was coming to the Brighton preferred booth. second of all, the women that were exhibiting all wanted to come to the Wi-Fi booth. And so we had that flow of people coming in on the second day. So we were constantly busy both days, actually.
Now, I saw out there on Twitter, Rosa, that Wi-Fi attracted 59 new members. That has got to be a show record.
It is. It is. We pretty much did 32 in Las Vegas in October of last year, and we did 59. So it was 2 mid-corporate, 31 individuals, and the rest was actual corporate corporations signing up, which was 10-plus women or more. We were beyond blown away, excited. The reason for that was because the people that worked in Cleveland or came to visit in Cleveland, they sent half their staff one day and the other half the other day. So somebody that would do an individual one day, next day that let's say the owner came or the manager came and they say, you know what, let me just do the whole group. And that's actually how we got all of our members.
Wow. Good. Well, that's good.
Well, congratulations on that. We'll have to circle back with Wi-Fi on a future podcast episode and see where you're at, what you're up to. We covered Wi-Fi extensively when you were just getting started, but not for some time. With regard to some of the events that went on, Jake, you had mentioned earlier that you attended, and I don't know why I talk about Wi-Fi, then I think about the speed dating event. How did the social networking YFP event go down? I mean, I saw it from a distance, didn't get a chance to attend.
Sure. Yeah. You know, Baron and Michael and I think Jesse from GL Hewitt had done a great job kind of putting it together. I think all told, there was probably 20 to 25 of us. We had about five or six tables, and then there was two of us at every table just stayed put. And I think we got a good, you know, 8 to 10 minute conversation where each table mate got to, you know, again, describe their business and kind of do a little bit of a, you know, 60-second commercial. And then, you know, then you just kind of talked back and forth about industry or maybe a little bit of a deeper dive into what that person did. But, you know, got to deal with some, talk to some suppliers and got to meet some distributors as well. So I just try and, you know, as me as a, is the tweener of YFP. I try and support what they're doing. So, and for me, and then again, it's just brand awareness with BTM and, you know, making sure everybody knows, you know, who and what we are and that we're ready to add their business to our platform.
Yeah, I remember you using that tweener term before. And folks, if you haven't heard Jake on the podcast before, go back a few episodes. There's one that we kind of got in depth in his history with the industry where he's at these days. And he does consider himself a tweener with the Young Fastener Professionals Group. I'm just wondering, what did we come up with? What's the top end of that and age-wise? How old do you?
I don't know. I consider, you know, really anybody, 70 works for me.
Okay, just checking.
I really don't know.
That's called Generation X, by the way.
That's very nice of you, Jake. Thank you very much.
They keep sending me the invites. Until those stop, I'm going to keep I'll keep doing it.
All right, we're gonna have to talk to Baron. He's driving YFP these days, I heard, and we'll talk to him a little bit. So, well, thank you for the recap on that. I mean, those are really great events. If you ask me, that's the best thing YFP's done for the industry. I hope they keep that up. What other highlights, folks? We're going to wind down our conversation about the show itself. And if there are any other things that stuck out to you, let us hear about it.
I just wanted, Eric, you know, we dined at the same establishment, but you guys were downstairs with a lot better location. But I was just going to, you know, I'm intrigued by what you guys ordered with the pig's head. So, and just to see how that turned out.
Well, Jake, we were just talking about Baron Yarborough, he of Spring Bolt and Nut out of Texas. And if you look on his Twitter feed, you can see exactly what we had for dinner that evening. And it was really good. Sounds terrible. Isn't. It's really good. It was pig's face. So we ordered.
Pig's face.
Yeah. And I wish we could have invited more people to the table. We were down at the very exclusive chef's table in the basement of the Greenhouse Tavern. That on East 4th Street there in Cleveland. It's a great place, and we really enjoy going down there. So we had about 12 people around that table, a couple of pig's faces, and I'm telling you, we chowed.
No, it looked like it. There was not much not much meat left on the bone or face. Yeah. I don't know.
Right. It sort of sounds disgusting, but it's actually not.
I'll take your word for it.
Rosa, so comment? You're agreeing with the sounds disgusting.
No, well, you know, I'm Latina, so I, you know, everything pig. So, but that saying, you know, the show itself, I just thought the educational seminars were fantastic. I mean, they were back to back. They were intriguing. They were wonderful to listen to. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go to all of them. I did pick and choose, especially the ones we hosted, Stress in the Workplace and Create Your Own Brand. But other than that, I just thought they did a great job. I really did.
No, I agree with you. I think it was just another part of the really good organization, okay? They had good subjects and good speakers.
Yeah, I really want to thank the people that spoke for us on behalf of Wi-Fi, which was Christine Hunt from Brighton Best and Gail Friedberg from Zago Manufacturing. I thought they did a fantastic job.
Okay, good.
Way to go, team. Well, I think a lot of people were surprised when they were leaving the facility and there was a giant sign there that said, "See you next year in Detroit." People weren't expecting that. I know I hadn't heard that before I saw that sign. And, of course, that news spread across the floor. People were talking about it quite a bit. The show is scheduled for May 22nd and 23rd, 2019 in Detroit. What were the reactions that you heard to that, Jake?
Mixed. I had a conversation kind of when I got back here in the last day or so that I hadn't heard this. So that this was Fastener Fair USA was supposed to be every other year show. That was the original intent. Certainly that changed, probably with the success of the Cleveland show. So I know there's, again, I'm a fan and a support the regional shows. I'm a board member with SFA. I like how, they, you know, for a lot of what they do, they give back to the industry, to scholarships, to kids, and all of that. And I'm not saying that Fast and Fair won't do that or hasn't done that or even, you know, the Vegas show. Like I said, I know there's some Midwest Fastener Association people that are a bit miffed, so to speak, because their every other year show, Fastener Tech, will take place, I think, in June, the first week of June 2019. So we're now at a point where suppliers like BTM are going to have to decide, can I do both or which one am I going to do? And that's the broader question for me, you know, and kind of what, you know, my take on it is just, do we have too many or what's the direction the industry goes here with these trade shows? You know, there's opportunities abound for us to get out there, but how many is too many? And it really comes down to a budget aspect of it. It comes down to a return on investment. And so I think that's just the tough conversation that us industry insiders, so to speak, and I probably don't even consider myself one of those, but that's what we have to talk about over these next few years, I think, is how do we make the most of the time and the shows that are available.
Right, that's true. But is it the function of the regional associations to run a trade show? I mean, there's lots and lots of things they do, and we're very happy members of the Midwest Fastener Association. There's lots of things for us other than trade shows. It organizes local meetings and all sorts of things like that. So it isn't necessarily set in stone that every regional association has to have a trade show, okay? I mean, there's a benefit, and maybe fewer bigger shows is better than a lot of small ones. I don't know that. I mean, this is just an idea. I'm just saying there's different ways you can deal with this whole problem.
No, I don't want to be painted as I'm just trying to be a realist. And I was flying back on Thursday night, and I counted, you know, in the program, there was 79 Asian, either Taiwan or China booths. That at 255, that was about 30%. That doesn't include any others, right? That's just, I think the Midwest Fastener Association had 45 to 50 booths at Fastener Fair USA, you know, is showing their support. And I think it worked out for some better than others. But again, I think a fair amount of them went for the OEM side of things and didn't really have that result, which maybe next year with it being in Detroit might be better. There might be a more automotive. Certainly there probably will be a more automotive tint to it, I would think.
Well, those are all valid issues surrounding the show. And of course, ultimately the market will speak. One other angle that occurred to me is that you've got really one national show, which currently is Vegas, and the others, which are trying to be, because Mack Brooks certainly presented Fastener Fair USA as an attempt to create a national show, which they ultimately may succeed in. Don't know. Fastener Tech has been operating now, I forget, Bri, I'm not sure, maybe the seventh or eighth rendition of it coming up, but really that tends to be more of a regional show as well. So we'll just have to see what the market will sustain.
I mean, so Rosa, for you, speaking on behalf of Brighton Best, I mean, look, the fear that, well, we can't be in front of OEMs, and yet, you know, Brighton Best is one of the master distributors, and yet you're quite happy to go there. How come your view's different to other people, I don't know, like, say, the Steelfast or the of this world, just say?
Well, okay, so between Ironclad, Gloves, and Preferred, and Brighton Best, we're roughly doing over 75 shows this year, okay? And that doesn't include the support that we offer to the associations, because right. We like to think that we sponsor. I mean, we're practically platinums in the majority of all the associations out there. So we support them. But it does come down to people attending the show. You know, more people that can attend the show, preferably customers and distributors, the more likely you'll have more suppliers coming in. So saying that, you know, we do look at these shows and say, okay, is it worth it? Is it not worth it? How many people do we send? You know, how much, you know, giveaways do we do?
It costs money to go to a show. I mean,
it does. But, you know, our platform is a little bit different. We want to promote our brand. Our brand is Preferred. Our brand is Ironclad Gloves. And because we have that goal in mind, you know, we'll do whatever it takes to make sure that people know who Preferred is and know who Ironclad is. I think at this stage of the game, everybody knows who Brighton Best is.
Yeah.
I like to think that us doing national shows everywhere, people will know who Wi-Fi is as well, women in the fastener industry. But, you know, until we become a household name, you know, as Preferred or Ironclad Gloves, we're going to support the shows.
Okay, good answer.
One way or another, we'll see what happens with Fastener Fair USA next year in Detroit. Once again, that's happening May 22nd and 23rd. Unfortunately, I don't have the name of the venue at my fingertips. But if you go out to fastenerfair.com and you go to the Fastener Fair USA tab, there's a charming little video there. And Rose, I see you there holding the ribbon. I think this is a little YouTube video. So, folks, if you're interested in seeing the scene there as it looked as the show opened, Melissa Magistro there, Bob GQ Bear, a couple of other folks, you hit the big time.
I think I will say I thought Fast and Fair did a very good job on social media as far as that aspect of it, promoting their show, you know, just the ramp up to it and even the videos they put together, you know, kind of the end of day review videos. I watched a couple of those when I got back and they were well done. You know, they had a reporter, so to speak, that kind of led the video. So, you know, from a management standpoint and a production standpoint, I think it was very, very well received.
We thought they did a great job. We actually re-signed for Brighton Best to go to Detroit, Fastener Fair Detroit, as well as Women in the Fastener Industry. So we'll be there.
Wow. You're really on the ball. We usually fool around and fiddle around for months before we finally find we can't find them anywhere to actually get a booth. You ought to organize our booth, Rose. Let's go. We get everything done right, okay?
Right next to the men's bathroom, Brian.
Well, team effort. You know, I'm very grateful for the team that I'm part of, which is Brighton Best, and as well as the women in the fastener industry. They're an amazing group, and I'm just so proud to be. It's easy to do hard. It's easy to do good work when you have great people behind you.
It's true. That's true. You're right.
Well said. Well said. Well, we appreciate you being with us and spending a little time to recap the show.
Correct.
We know you're busy and you blew an hour with us, so that was really great. We do appreciate it. Thanks, Rosa. You're with BBI, of course, and you are Rosa the Riveter.
Rosa the Preferred Riveter.
Yeah, right. You're right.
Thank you.
Get the Preferred there.
And Jake Davis, you are with BTM Manufacturing, fortuitously the newest sponsor of Fully Threaded Radio. So we thank you for being on the podcast today for this recap and for our new relationship as sponsor and sponsee.
Absolutely. Guys, appreciate the opportunity. Always enjoy recapping or shows or talking about the industry. So you guys are the best.
Good.
So we're very happy to partner with Fully Threaded Radio.
Really super glad to have you. Well, folks, be it in Detroit, be it in Vegas, in Chicago, or elsewhere, Fully Threaded will be there. Jeez, that sounded like something Howard Cosell would say.
I know, yeah, right.
Can I mention Wi-Fi is going to be at the Southwest Fastener Association come May 2nd and 4th? So we're going to do the tabletop there.
Good to know.
Can I mention also that I don't know how you've managed to save it, Rosa, but your Fully Threaded white T-shirt that caused a bit of a stir.
Sorry.
No one knew how you got it. That's from the early days before I really convinced Eric that white was not a good color for me and we needed to go to black ones, okay?
Well, you have black ones?
We have black, or we don't know if we have any now. We went to black ones. What I found, whenever I needed to do something in the garden, I just happened to be wearing something white and it was too late to take it off, so I ran through all my Fully Threaded ones instantly, okay?
Yeah, I'm still waiting on mine, gentlemen. So.
Thanks, Rosa.
Extra large.
I can sense that there's going to be a reissue of Fully Threaded Radio T-shirts. It's been a many years.
I think there should be.
I think you're right, Jake, and we're going to get on that. We've been out of stock for a long, long time. And thank you for tweeting that out there, Rosa. That was that was very nice. And can I say now that we will be back with more Fully Threaded Radio in just a minute.
These guys aren't screwing around much. Brian and Eric, Fully Threaded Radio, internet talk radio for the fastener industry.
When top quality and outstanding service are at the top of your list in fastener suppliers, turn to Stelfast. Since 1976, Stelfast has grown to become an industry-leading importer and manufacturer of the highest quality industrial fasteners, specialty items, and automotive parts. Our array of facilities across North America and in Asia, along with full quality control labs and ISO 9001-2008 certifications, ensure the highest quality parts, and at Stelfast, they're delivered with undisputed service excellence. We're family-run and dedicated to your success. Our customers have come to depend on the expertise of our staff and the quality of our products. We also offer a wide range of secondary services to meet some of the toughest requirements you might have. Contact Stelfast today through our website at www.stelfast.com and put us to work for you. Stelfast, service you deserve, people you trust.
Are you tired of empty promises from software vendors? Are you paying for support that you're not receiving? Is it time for another paid upgrade? There is a solution. InSQL delivers quality software designed for the fastener industry at an affordable price with industry-leading support. Unlike other software companies, with InSQL, you purchase your software once. There will never be a paid upgrade. If you need assistance with anything, InSQL is there to help. When you call, you will always speak with a real person offering you quick and knowledgeable answers to your questions. Can your current provider say this? Quality software, affordable pricing, industry-leading support. Only InSQL can deliver all three. So, why settle? Call InSQL Software at 877-446-9775 or visit www.inxsql.com.
BTM Manufacturing is a domestic ISO 9001 manufacturer of threaded fasteners and bent wire products. From anchor bolts to studs to U-bolts, BTM is committed to making your per-print special with the highest quality standards while meeting your on-time delivery schedule. Since BTM began in 1961, this family-owned business has remained focused on providing exceptional service to their customers. Centrally located in Kansas City, Missouri, BTM recently expanded into a 100,000-square-foot facility, which allows for the production and manufacture of many projects simultaneously, both large and small quantity. BTM's website at btm-mfg.com allows you to submit custom quotes quickly and easily, and once you do, a BTM team member will contact you as soon as possible to discuss your needs. Are you ready to get started? BTM is. Visit www.btm-mfg.com today.
Since 1905, Buckeye Fasteners and the Ohio Nut and Bolt Company have been supplying the world with high-quality fasteners. Our standard product lines include weld fasteners, graded weld screws, leg levelers, self-clinching hardware, clevis pins, rivet nuts, and various other fastener lines, allowing us to support virtually all types of industries. We have complete custom manufacturing capabilities in low carbon, medium carbon, and stainless steel materials, and our quality systems are registered to ISO standards. Our on-staff engineering department can assist you with product development and provide total technical support. Our knowledgeable sales team members offer superior customer service and are here to answer any questions you may have regarding our products. Having a hard time finding a part? Let our sourcing specialist do the work for you to locate those items. We offer competitive pricing with typically smaller minimums and shorter lead times. To find out more about Buckeye Fasteners, please call us at 800-437-1689 or on the web at buckeyefasteners.com. Buckeye Fasteners, more than just weld.
This is Leo Kaur, editor of Distributors Link magazine, and you're listening to Fully Threaded Radio.
Brian and Eric back with you, fighting for truth, justice, and the fastener way of life. Fully Threaded Radio.
Right. And just like momentarily going back to the NFDA 50th.
Yes.
I'd like to say that while I took totally the wrong set of clothes, Morgan Wilson from the International Fastener Expo took the right set of clothes and his surfboard with him as well, as I found out when I found him down the beach one day. Okay.
You mean he actually traveled with his own personal surfboard?
Yeah, he did.
Hey, it looks like that kind of surfer kind of dude.
It was cool. I sort of thought, well, this is sort of hard. And he said, no, it's easy, actually. So,
all kinds of interesting people in the fastener industry, huh, Bri?
Yeah.
And those people include our guests on today's main feature segment, Rosa Hearn with Brighton Best International, and Jake Davis joined us for our Fastener Fair USA wrap-up. It was RW Baird analyst Dave Manthey who joined me to discuss the March FDI numbers. And Carmen Bertullo presented the Fastener Training Minute. Great job, everybody. Plus, the lovely and talented Lynn Dempsey did yeoman service as usual, collecting all of the audio snippets down there in Costa Rica. And thanks to everybody who participated in those as well. I know a lot of times she comes walking up with her microphone and people are a little, well, sometimes they're a little shy, but everybody did a great job. And at Fastener Fair USA too, I should point out. So thanks right. to everybody.
Yep. Usually the only person who's really terrified if any of us turn up with a microphone is Wayne Wishnew, actually. He holds a cross up in front of himself whenever I come near him.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, Bri, because I happened to run into Wayne when he was hanging out with Jake Davis at the Fastener Fair, and you may be in for a pleasant surprise coming up. I'm not going to say anything more because it's not locked in.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Amazing what Fully Threaded Radio brings you, folks. And Fully Threaded Radio is brought to you by our title sponsors. They are Stealthfast. For service you deserve and people you trust, it's Stealthfast. And Lindstrom. Lindstrom, by any measure. Fully Threaded Radio is also sponsored by Buckeye Fasteners, BTM Manufacturing, Fastenal, Fastener Technology International, InSequel Software, ND Industries, The Worth Group, Volt Industrial Plastics, the International Fastener Exposition, and Solution Industries, home of Solution Man. Get with us anytime, folks. The email address is ftr@fullythreaded.com, and out there on Twitter, the handle's Fully Threaded. Like we said at the top of the show, folks, we'd appreciate any and all help you can give us spreading the word about the podcast. Maybe you can help some of your technically less astute friends put the podcast on their mobile phone. That's always a plus. We had some fun with that at Fastener Fair. And I tell you what, I wasn't really doing myself too proud, Bri, when some Android people came up to me because I don't know, right. Maybe I'm just an iPhone kind of guy. But eventually we succeeded, but it was a little more than I was expecting.
Yeah. Yeah, we get used to things being a little easy in the Apple world. However, there is another world.
We can see by the clicks that there are a lot of Android phone users who listen to the podcast as well, and you're all welcome. Well, I got to tell you, Brian, I mean, overall on this episode, I felt a little bit like David St. Hubbins on a screw machine.
Wow, how's that?
Well, David St. Hubbins, you might remember, was one of the guitarists in the legendary rockumentary Spinal Tap. And I don't imagine he was very good as a header, you know? So, I don't know, we was just being a little out of sorts. We were scrambling, coming back from Fastener Fair USA. I've got my bags packed, I'm out the door going to Phoenix for the PAC West. Right. And in the meantime, we've had so much to catch up on. Mike McNulty wasn't here, so just a little out of sorts, but I hope the episode kind of flowed okay. What do you think?
Oh, I think it did okay. Okay.
All right.
I mean, what do you want me to say? That we suck?
Never. Well, leave that to the listeners.
Right.
Well, however it turned out, I guess we'll hear about it, as we always do. And I'm looking forward to seeing all the PAC Westers and hangers-on out there in the near future. And then, Bri, when I get back, it'll only be a little while, and you'll be heading out in this direction for the NCFA Distributor Social. So, you know, that's cool. What do you say about that?
Yeah, well, I can't wait. Hello, Cleveland. I like Cleveland.
Well, that's going to put this episode of Fully Threaded Radio in the can. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Till next time.
Till next time. For Brian Musker, this is Eric Dudas. Get out there, sell some screws, keep on rocking. We'll talk to you next time.
Yeah, all day.
Fully Threaded Radio is a production of Fasteners Clearinghouse. Music provided by Audionautics.
No, this way. Tracy O'Hara!